best. That's good.
And I do feel you know more about the arts in Minnesota than anybody else.
Oh, I don't think so, but I know a lot about them.
You've certainly got a lot of interesting data.
Yeah, it's, we're in the process now, we're just about finished analyzing all the criteria.
I'm afraid.
I think it, I think Austin is gonna be in this year. We have high hopes.
We've been saying, yeah, we've been saying what we're seeing. And you sort of agree.
Apparently, later.
Here's where the bomb went.
Well, I think I'll just look it up in the room.
Bomb went off your head, wasn't it?
Yeah, about 1969, in the middle of all of it.
Yeah, this whole building, this whole thing that bombed up.
Somebody just planted up there.
Well. No, I think Linda maybe can talk about this, the consumer thing, you mean, wants to know.
What does it mean? Your item, the consumer support.
Aaron, it's just horrific. It's a finale. You go to the legislature. It sort of reiterates, and I can show it to you, I have a rough draft that I wrote over the weekend.
I mean, is this just a public opinion survey?
No, 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 it's much more than that. It's all the signs as to how the citizens are already supporting the arts, both through volunteerism, through attendance, through giving, through serving on boards. It will be essentially a reiteration of what's gone before.
Defining all of us as consumers finally, is that it?
Well, a citizen's case for the arts is what I call, it's sort of more of a general public, the show of for the legislature.
You got all the numbers on volunteerism, marginals of that.
And then we talk about their attitudes toward how they feel toward government support of the arts. And before this, with the trend, Jimmy's trend study, we'll talk about why the arts need to be supported. I am also writing a section to sort of follow that, or before that, as to why the arts should be supported. And that's sort of an economic argument. If you're familiar with private goods, public goods, and seeing the arts as mixed commodities, I'll talk about that today, and talking about why they need to be financed, why they cannot pay for themselves. As a philosophical argument that leads into our whole funding program. And then say the legislature should consider the arguments as to why the arts should be supported, why the arts organizations need to be supported, and how the citizens are already supporting the arts, and then take this as a mandate for increased funding. We'll see.
I was astonished at the great increase in public funding that you've turned up. And I was wondering where it was.
At Compass.
Well, part of it is in just in federal dollars. It's going from.
Well, is it federal?
Well, in federal dollars from 69 to 75, it's gone from 198,000 to 1,720,000.
Oh, really?
And the state arts board, of course, is still, it's at 500,076, but we don't have numbers on 76, we only have on 75, and that's only 300,000, so the rest of the increase is probably local.
Local, I mean, it's places like Rochester and Moorhead.
Well, and Minneapolis. Minneapolis putting the mill levy on for the institute.
Yeah. But the increase in the mill levy, which really only became fully effective in 75.
Yeah, it's really jumped.
Yeah.
It really has. And the other half of that is the way the private sector has gone down.
Well, and I suspect when you're going back to, let's see, what's your initial year?
69.
That's nearly all the Hennepin County mill levy, isn't it?
That's what's very awkward.
The local one, yes. The local one is awkward, and that's it. The other, there is a significant part of it. About $500,000 of it is Ramsey County, to the St. Paul Ramsey Arts and Science Council.
Right.
Which is about half of what the, you know, it's about half of what Minneapolis is. So taking those two together,
it's a very
big chunk of it.
Well, not only a big chunk, but a big increase.
Yes.
In fact, on that citizen's case for the arts, I was reading over the weekend after I'd already written this, a study by the Aspen Arts Institute. It was actually done by those girls at New York Council on the Arts as to how to convince the legislature that you'd need more money, and they said the most effective thing is to marshal all your figures as to what the general public already thinks about the arts and what they're doing for them now. And that's the whole, I was glad to see. They said this is the most effective way to ever get your funding out of a legislature, out of any public body, is to tell them what their constituents are now doing.
You know, there's another point. I've never seen it justified, but I've heard it complained about. Namely, that Minnesota proportionately gets, I think, more than any other state for out of the National Foundation. Do you know what the truth is?
I don't think they do.
I don't know if I have the proportion numbers. Do we have proportion numbers, Mary Ellen?
Minnesota gets a greater proportion of state grants than any other state.
Proportionally gets. No, I've been told more than any other. I can't prove it, but at least proportionately a very high percentage.
I think it's in the history thing that it was mailed out, but I can't remember offhand. It seems to me that we rank in gifts from NJA high, but not significantly so.
Not very much.
I look for it in the history, yeah.
We may be something like 15th, but when you take that in proportion to what's going into New York State or something, it's like the.
Well, I'm talking about just the national level, that's all.
But what national endowment we put into New York is so much significantly higher than we may rank.
That's what you get from the falls and opera.
Right. I think those figures are upstairs, but I don't have a new sheet.
Well, is anybody know roughly?
My source of this is people in other states.
Well, we think you're getting more than they are.
I gave Mary Ellen my.
Oh, you did.
I give you more?
Oh, thank you very much.
Dean?
You want some more?
No.
There's only one man in this room who knows the answer to the question you asked.
I don't even know what NCCR is. That's your only question?
The National Commission on Cultural Resources.
Okay. And this is budget 8.3.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go through it. I hope to do it as.
Right.
I thought it was differential analysis.
I don't know what you got today.
Oh, it's regression.
What about that?
I thought I brought along everything in this last mail.
I think that's just a campus.
It must have been an earlier one.
Yeah, that's all right. I was talking to someone before that was going to that meeting, but I don't remember where it is.
They didn't come with it.
Yeah, no, the last one, no.
Is this all the time that was able to
talk about? That's all I got here.
My mic is on.
two more coming this afternoon. And we have something else. The other two, he said, be somebody that.
Always use the. We'll always be using this middle and upper.
You'll move by Friday.
This is a low boundary, this is a high boundary, all based on the line on 2 and 3 is an inflation rate, and 3 is error rate. But there's only about a 1 in 100 chance of it being lower than this.
Mary Ellen, when did you last talk to him on that letter? Michael, yeah. Steve, I talked to. I talked to Bill on the phone on Friday, and he had said that they had sent him the annual report, and I suggested that he send out the same questions to the Art Institute.
I don't have
answers, send them in the mail, call them that it's coming, and tell him he'll call back for the answers later.
But it's not very big.
He do it for the.
It's only like $500. And I figured if I had a choice, I'd take the $500 and leave it.
I'd play my three o'clock.
We'll be out of here a little before then.
Yes.
Yes.
What happened to the extra copies?
Yeah.
There they are.
Started off there, because I'm not sure yet what we need.
Yes, nobody was hurt, right?
Nobody was hurt, but you had such a good description of what it was. I kept waiting for the news in the.
You know what they did? They went and covered the bodies of their kids. Put them down, they put tarpaulins over them. I saw these sheets covering. And the bus was turned over. I was so happy that nobody was.
And you want one to the gentleman right behind you?
Yes.
Thank you.
You have all margins on that, which means you have it.
Oh, Phil.
My mother says you're one of the most charming people she's ever met.
Oh, I was going to surprise you by asking you if you have to guess who I met at a party last night.
No.
Well, she's a nice lady.
One more minute.
She enjoyed your little sojourn, right?
Yeah, she did.
Corporation.
Very much.
Linda, to start with her outline, we can go right here.
I guess the first thing, if you have your outlines in front of you, I think the way to start is maybe out by looking at page 4. Essentially, when we, in trying to edit this document and going with to the printer with the document, I'd like to make the whole report, and I'm sure all of you would, as usable to everyone as possible. And I think we're trying to serve a number of different kinds of audiences with this document. One, we have to serve the legislators who will go for appropriation, have things in simple enough terms that they can understand, and yet with the backup material behind it. We also, since so much research has been done in this document, we have to have all the backup material for arts organizations or for anyone else who is interested in finding out how we got to these studies, interested in particular facts. Backing up this information will also be the primary research documents that we'll keep, perhaps at the State Arts Board Library, so that people can refer to our original analyses of all these texts. The book I see as being highly usable. It will have what is called a perfect binding, manufactured by H.P. Fuller. The glue, which is something like the phone book. So the book opens up very easily and you can look at it and use it. We will have the glossary of terms, which will things be like the primary survey, the probe survey, things that will be analyzed in the text but maybe referred throughout. Also words like median, mean, mode. The glossary of terms on the inside covers of the book, so you don't have to turn to a page for the glossary to understand what we're talking about. These will be in the most, words like this will also be included really in the backup sections, but anyone who starts up with a particular backup section will be able to immediately, if they're not familiar with the term, go to the glossary on the inside cover and have no problem with that. Then, I see at least four different type styles, as I've noted, being used here throughout the text. And the first will be the major recommendations of the commission. And these will be, I don't know how many numbers that the commission will actually approve on. And these will be set in boldface throughout the report. They will also, as you can see, appear first in a separate chapter of the document, the major findings and the recommendations of the commission. And then as they are used throughout the text, they will appear again. And in this first chapter, we'll also refer later on to where you can actually find greater backup data on this particular recommendation. They will also be making other recommendations, which I think the staff may come up, and which I don't think have to go to the commission, and they will be, as I say, an example, the media report we're getting, as to how arts organizations might better market themselves. These will be suggestions that go primarily to arts organizations, to artists, etc. And this will be in another sort of typeface throughout the document. Then you'll get these overviews, and these will be able to essentially stand alone. They will go, they will be set on a page, I see pretty much as you would completely across the page. They will be in perhaps a slightly larger print, and they'll be something that the legislators will be able to read just these overviews if they wish, and find out what our primary findings and conclusions have been through for this whole report. Each section will have an overview that will bring out the highlights. The overviews I sent one in the mail. They may run from one page to five pages, depending on the study below. And then we'll get behind this the supporting text, which will probably be set with double columns. And this will be all our findings, which will be all the backup data for these overviews. And will be written, as I say, I think, as concisely as possible, yet substantial enough to provide the necessary backup for all the findings. So I see this as really being a highly usable document that I'd like people to keep around, that other states could use, that will be useful for everyone. And also, throughout the text, in the supporting text sections, we'll use as many figures, such as charts, graphs, etc., and we'll have the tables that substantiate these figures in the appendices. So each chapter will have their own appendix stating the research methodology that went into each study and the backup tables, any other interesting data that's not crucial to the text of the report but that was also interesting. So I think you'll get at least we hope, a very usable document out of this whole piece.
I have a question.
Yes.
I assume that the supporting text is going to be quite lengthy.
Oh yes, this document's going to be, I should say, about probably 250 pages long.
Yeah, and I guess my question is that for those that want to look at the report and that are not necessarily are interested in the results and some of the underlying material would be interested in 1 through 3. Is that pretty much
In other words, are you, how concise will 1, 2, and 3 be for use by legislators and other people? What is the size of the pamphlet that's going to be readily available? Or the
what do you mean by 1, 2, 3?
Well, I'm looking at page 4.
Oh, on page 4.
I guess my question is, and my comment is that I would hope that what is really intended for use is not in itself going to be overly bulky, so that the impact of the study is going to be
no, and I think what I see doing after we get this major report doing out is perhaps to take just the overviews and the major findings and recommendations and print those up separately into a smaller pamphlet, as is normally done with national reports. This will be up to the commission as to how they want to use it. But the reason we're using different type styles, too, is so that legislators, as they're going through, the overview will be the first thing to come. And they can flip on to the next chapter. We'll have a good index here, too. Or good table of contents so that they can go through and find these things. But I think legislators who want to find, want to know basically what we found, but are, if they're interested to make sure we know how we found it, we're not just saying this, they'll also have that information available to them.
That being the assumption, is there any way to estimate how many pages that 1 through 3 would want run?
Well, the minor recommendations would not have to go before the legislature. It would just be the major ones and the introductory overviews.
I get 1 and 2.
Really, 1 and 2.
Well, the 1 and 3.
I mean, 1 and 3.
I guess my prejudice is that if you end up with anything that's at all lengthy, that you're going to lose much of your impact on many of the readers.
Well, I think that's a on the other hand, I feel that if it's easy enough to understand it.
Appreciate that.
Right.
I guess a lot of people, if they see a lot in front of them, will be less enthusiastic than something.
I think the national report and the article.
Right.
I mean,
this is, right, this is the kind of thing I saw our eventual report.
About 40 pages. 40 little pages.
Yeah. And these would essentially be the overviews.
And the first 5 pages will carry all the essential findings and conclusions that you, a legislator who's not terribly interested in the subject but wants to have something in front of them. To make a comment about has and open it up right there.
Right, you can find.
Well, I guess I would just comment that I for one would be interested in making sure that without sacrificing substance as much as possible that you do have a final document that is not too imposing.
I would surely say.
Well, I think then there have to be sort of 2 final documents too, because I think this is also a very comprehensive study we've undertaken. And
why don't we wait and decide that after we see what you got everything in front of you? I think you can get a better feel for what's going to be available.
Yeah. This is, by the way, one of the most massive state studies that's ever been undertaken, really. It's by far, I feel, far more comprehensive than looking at any other statewide reports we've gotten. They've tackled a heck of a lot more than anybody else ever thought of having. I appreciate your concern, though, and this is why I see it at least to make these overview sections immediately obvious to anyone and to be listed in the table of contents so that they can find the reasoning. I would frankly hope that some of the legislators would also be interested in reading the backup material too, but I think you have to. The backup material is pared down from the original material by far too. Okay. So
while we're in this methodology, your references, I assume, will follow each section.
Each section, right.
I mean, you're not going to have a batch of references.
We are going to have, footnotes will be right on the page.
Yeah.
We will also have, for each chapter, we'll have their own selected bibliography, and I think overall bibliography will perhaps be listed in the back. A lot of this is, the bibliography for the whole study is, as far as what we actually use, will not be that great because we have so much original research, there's frankly no need to pad it with much else of what's been found in other national studies. We are, being essentially a newspaper woman, I certainly am of the philosophy that people will only read a certain amount of material and then stop, so.
All right, why don't we go on with the
okay, fine. First, as you can see, we have a brief history of the commission, which I guess Michael drew up and Steve is working on, which will be very short. Acknowledgements will essentially be a listing or an explanation of how the commission decided to study these different areas, what areas staff studied, what areas were tackled by outside resources, the listing of the staff, the table of contents, as you can see, table of illustrations, and as I said, the glossary of terms will be used to move the inside and outside, or inside covers of the inside and outside cover, if you can understand this. The introduction I conceived as being fairly short as to essentially what they decided to study. It will, and why I have not drawn that up yet. The major findings and recommendations of the commission I think are self-explanatory. Then we come to the state of the arts in Minnesota. And I guess before I go with this, I should have given one more sort of my conceptualization of this whole report. It's essentially a two-part report. One is, the first part is a survey of what actually art services do exist in Minnesota. The second part is a study of how these arts resources should be funded, or should improve earned income and should be funded through private and public sector support. And the bridge, or the trough, as I see Jimmy, is a trend study. And also a short essay by which I am working on now as to why the arts should be supported at all. This will be sort of the bridge. So
one small item. I don't think we need advertisements, but I would think early there you ought to tell who the people are that have worked on this.
The commissioners.
The commission and the staff.
Exactly. In the acknowledgments, I believe the staff will be listed under. I saw that the brief history of the commission would list the commissioners themselves.
Maybe it will unsell the report.
I don't know about you, but I'm going under a nom de plume for this.
Everybody thinks I'm under a nom de plume.
All right, then the state of the arts in Minnesota, and this is essentially, as you can see, all the art services that are offered in Minnesota. We will start out with an overview of this, the art services, and then we will go into essentially what has been Mary Ellen's study on nonprofit arts organizations in Minnesota. And I think she will be the one to certainly should explain how all this data they gathered off this 40-page questionnaire.
Yeah, don't make it any worse than it was.
Yeah, 26-page questionnaire is going to be presented.
Why don't we then go?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's changed a little bit from what was on the outline. I think that was enforcing or inflicting a form on it that maybe it really doesn't lend itself to. I think instead we'll start out with a. No, that's the trend study. But it'll start out with sort of an introduction, which will highlight all of the things throughout the rest of the study, go on and talk about the organizations by organizational type and budget size, and where organizational type isn't an important factor, we'll talk about it just like by budget size. I'm not sure that is clear. What we want to do is build models of organizations based on three different budget categories. It became obvious as we went through the data that groups tended to fall into one of three categories: less than $5,000 without staffs, generally speaking, non-professional groups, $5,000 to $75,000 where they have a part-time or one-person staff, and over $75,000 where they tend to have at least a partial full-time staff, but at each level there's still a great deal of volunteerism. And for each one of these budgetary categories, we'll build models of organizations. And right now we're planning on building models of organizations which are music groups, theater groups, dance groups may be included with theater because there are only 11 of them in the state, visual art groups as opposed to museums and galleries because they're two distinct entities. The visual art groups tend to be groups that are very small, completely volunteered, whereas the museum and the art gallery, art centers tend to be large complexes such as the Walker Art Center or the Rochester Civic, Rochester Art Center, and so forth. and then go into service organizations and literary groups. There's only four in the state, and we may not address ourselves to them at all, but draw up models of what these organizations essentially look like, what kind of staffs they normally have, how many volunteers they normally have, with throwing in the sort of data that we've collected. And then from there, be able to base some recommendations to groups in each one of those budget categories as to what they might do to make themselves run more effectively. None of us are marketing people, and none of us are business administrators, so it's not going to be hardcore, direct, definitive kinds of recommendations, but rather recommendations such as you may well be advised to attempt to earn more of your income or seek more of your income from private sectors, that sort of a thing, just general recommendations to art groups. I see that whole section, besides being just informative as to what the arts look like in Minnesota, really being more of a guideline to the organizations themselves and not really being that terribly informative to a legislature. That whole section, which will probably be one of the more lengthy, I anticipate somewhere around 40 pages long, could essentially be pulled out and not given to the legislature. The data will be covered in the regional analysis and in the introduction. Those two, I think, are the ones that are going to be the key pieces to give to the legislature, particularly the regional breakdown, which will be just of the actual services provided and the actual dollars, income, and expense. We're not going to go too much beyond that, because I think those are the things that are of primary concern to the legislators who are concerned with regional breakdown. Yeah.
Are you specifically going to identify the organizations?
Everything is aggregated, and we had a pact with each of the groups who responded that they would not be. The only place where a group will be directly identified is the comparability study, this elusive thing that you've been hearing about for months, will be addressed in this section. When we talk about the budget categories of each of the largest budget types or each of the organizational types, we will insert at that point the comparability studies. So at that point, we will talk about the Walker Art Center with its comparables. And we will talk about the Society of Fine Arts if we ever get the Society's comparable to respond. And those will be the only point at which they will be identified. Other than that, no. And as to a timeline on it, I anticipate, well, we've got the introduction section is written. The regional section is in the process of being written, and we're within 24 hours away from being done with the analysis on all of the information to be included in the regional or the budget size organizational type. So I'm thinking within another week we should have a really rough draft of that. So hopefully we can get you, I would say, a rough draft at least 2 or 3 days before the next commission meeting, with luck. So you'll have time to have looked over that before the meeting. That, now, when I say a rough draft, I mean it may be in really rough form. Hopefully all sentences will have nouns and verbs, but other than that, I'm not going to guarantee you much. But the data will be there, and then we'll have to go into the editing stage of that. But I don't anticipate that happening until about October 1, actually.
I think this will be a rather sophisticated section, very valuable for all arts organizations as well as the legislators and anybody interested in the arts to see how these organizations do behave. We have all the data off the surveys, which you got in the form of marginals, all those questions and answers and some analysis, and obviously we're not going to just send that back to the legislature and say, here, you read 90 pages.
Most of that.
But rather analyze it all. And I think that the way Mary Ellen selected to analyze the data will be extremely helpful to everybody. And it's been sort of attempted in other studies, but they've never really quite pulled it all together the way I think we'll be able to pull it all together here.
A lot of the data that we gathered is not going to be addressed in this particular section. A lot of it went into the trend study, a lot of it goes into the consumer study, a lot of it goes into the private sector study. The question that repeatedly is asked of me, of people that I know in the arts community, is I want to see that stuff. I spent a lot of hours filling out that survey, and I want to see it in your report. And if you're anticipating it, seeing it all in one block form in 50 pages, it won't be there because it's disseminated throughout the whole study. But I'd say of all of the data we gathered, very little of it is not being used. It was surprisingly good, and the things that weren't good we're just tossing out because it's at this point that you can't include what isn't good just because it's there. But I think most of it is being used at one point or another. It's been useful. 26 pages was a lot, but it's been useful.
Any organization who wants it, you can mail some marginal
right.
Notes. Let them read those. Yeah.
In the last year or two, there have been a number of national magazine articles, which I think everyone in this room is familiar with, praising the state of Minnesota for its quality of life, sometimes the Twin Cities.
David, you're not there in the outline yet.
I see that you get to that. I wondered if you were going to include copies of the.
We've got something better, and I'll tell you when we get there.
Yes.
I'll tell you, there's a hotshot group over here. The staff. We do have some very, very good things here, and I think it may not be. This outline is an organic thing. It changes week by week, and as certain strong sections come in, we sort of move them around, and we will get onto that part of it. I think the only other thing in Mary Ellen's report that will be of interest to you and the legislature will be in that issues section, where we probably will talk. Do you think separately about plans for expansion, Mary Ellen, or?
I don't know. I want to see how that falls in place. The thing that, I don't have the outline before me, but there's a section here that says issues and paid staff, administrative facilities, and so forth. I think what we'll address there is if any one of those categories or those topics produces something that's really interesting or that we're going to address ourselves too heavily in recommendations, then we'll highlight that in a separate section. But I think most of that will get covered internally. I hope so.
By the organizational type of budget size, she means it will be covered there.
I want to avoid as much redundancy as possible. As Mr. Crosby pointed out, it's going to be long, and so as much as we can edit out by only repeating it once, I think the better off we are. And I hate to address things more than once if we can help it. But what might be approach there would be the plans for expansion, because that leads into the whole concept of public funding and private funding for the arts.
Right.
That might be something that's separately highlighted.
Okay. This next section called Media and the Arts has been replaced, and I don't mean replaced, but placed in a new spot on earned income. So I think we'll wait till we get to earned income to talk about this media report here. The next study is what is called here secondaries, and for political reasons, we will certainly not call them secondaries. This is it means those organizations who, essentially community organizations and the Science Museum of Minnesota, who do produce arts activities but who are not nonprofit arts organizations. They're nonprofit organizations, but they're not primarily arts organizations. We'll call them probably community organizations in the Science Museum of Minnesota. So, Jimmy, I think you've gotten back.
The secondaries report, as you recall, is based on some interviews with governing or coordinating agencies done by Janet Dulson when she was on the staff, and a survey sent out to several community organizations, libraries, day activity centers, corrections facilities, historical societies. There were 118 mailed out and 93 returned. That data from the survey is analyzed. Janet's report on the secondaries was, the interviews was mailed to you, and we've had a writer come in and put the two of them together, and we got the copy back today. It will be edited, and the final draft will be available tomorrow. We'll send it out in the mail. The Science Museum has to be added onto that section, and then there's an overview that covers the Science Museum and the community organization that goes in this little document we're talking about. As far as recommendations from this section goes, it's a really strange group of organizations. They provide 1,668 classes, lectures, performances, attractions in the arts. 63 organizations do that, but they only make $13,000 worth of income on it, which is about $8 an event. So they're doing it pretty much out of their budgets, from wherever those budgets come from. They're not charging for the performances. And it's hard to get right into recommendations based on the information we have. I think the major recommendation that I see, having viewed the data, and you might have more as we send it out to you and you read it and you think about these secondary organizations, and many of you I'm more familiar with these kinds of organizations than I am, but one of their problems is they don't have artistic personnel. And since this report started out, the suggestion was that we open the State Arts Board its funds up to secondary organizations and let them apply to the State Arts Board to get grants to do art programming. And now when we look at it and they don't have artistic personnel, it strikes me that that would be a questionable expenditure of state arts board money would can be going to arts organizations that do have artistic personnel. And so the way I see it is sort of suggesting a coordination between secondary organizations where they exist and arts organizations where they don't exist. In other words, if they don't have dance in Duluth, have the Duluth Public Library act as the sponsor of an attraction for a Twin Cities dance company to come up to Duluth, and have the two of them go together on a grant to the State Arts Board, and that way you get the deliverer of the service where the people are, and the artistic personnel necessary to make the expenditure worthwhile. And that's what I see as the major sort of recommendation. Now, like I say, when you get that sort of raw report on what we found, that's not raw, it's a pretty polished report on what we found, you can look at it and maybe something else will appear to you, but I see that as the one major recommendation. And I think we're trying to hold recommendations down to like 15 or 20, and I think one is enough to expend on secondary. Yeah. And that will come before the commission, certainly before some major recommendation. Mm-hmm.
The title secondaries to me has some demeaning possibilities.
Yeah, that's why I said it's going to be called community organizations.
Yes, I'll try to get that more.
Right, that's we've gotten into this jargon in the office when we talk about different studies, and it certainly will be called a
supplemental resource.
Yeah.
They are organizations whose primary function is not art services.
This is one of the thing that's I think very interesting about this report and does set this report apart. There are a couple things. For one thing, Mary Ellen is studying in her report arts organizations with budgets $5,000 and below, and in no national report that I can find or state report has anybody ever studied these organizations. So I think this is very interesting. And then the study of the community organizations which provide art services. Every other people said, yes, there are art services from community organizations, the educational system, et cetera, but we're not going to even tackle them, or they begin to tackle them and then it falls off. So I think this will be very interesting. We'll get a fairly complete and rather, I think, sophisticated view of how the arts do look for the whole state of Minnesota, and not arts just produced by nonprofit arts organizations, which I think will be quite interesting.
I think concept also of tying together the two in terms of requesting for grants is an excellent one.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're talking about large dollars, mm-hmm. you really, the question comes up whether just the existing vehicles and organizations are sufficient, are appropriate users of that. But when you have a much broader spectrum that they're working from, existing validly recognized community organizations, specific project, you have much more of a self-selection process. It's not just the arts organization which has a particular project that it wants to sell in a community that wants to do something, but you've got a trial and error within a selection of each of the organizations is the best project, and then convincing a third.
Interestingly enough, education, which is a major section later on, education really is a secondary, and excuse me for using that word once more, but a secondary in that same sense, in that their primary function is something other than art services, but they do provide art services. And so that kind of recommendation carries over. The State Department of Education and the people who do the Minnesota Alliance for Arts and Education think the major problem in arts education is coordination, and I guess that applies to secondaries too. Coordinating somebody comes in or goes down to Rochester to do a tour and they do a program at night and they're there in the afternoon, they could just as well be going to the school and doing a quick program in the afternoon. And I think that both in the secondary section, the community organization section, and the education section, that will be brought out.
I might also mention, I don't know if I told Steve this, but one of the staff members was on the phone to the state of Washington. They had Lou Harris do a study similar to the New York study, which is very much similar to Mary Ellen's study, where they ask questions about art services and then break them down as to region, how they should, they don't really break them down very well, but every table is broken down according to region, organizational type, and budget size. And Lou Harris, for this study, the state of Washington, which does not include organizations 5,000 above, charges $180,000. And this is just sort of the first part of our report. So,
Where does the science museum come in on?
The Science Museum comes in under secondary, under community organizations, this whole section, organizations whose primary function is something other than arts, but who do provide art services. And the Science Museum, the people at the Science Museum in publicity, the important thing about the Science Museum is their outreach program. The way they manage to get their product or their service out to the public and the people who will partake of that service. And it's exemplary. And we, to the extent that they do arts as well, we want to talk about how they do it, because they do it in a really interesting way that's really I think the arts could, by having, informing people in arts.
Not because of their particular impact on the world of art.
No, it's because of the way they do their program.
Right, it's a two-sided thing. In fact, we're having a little.
Yeah.
Little trouble getting some of the figures out. So, Jack, my husband, Ed Titcomb, are meeting this afternoon with Phil. So, call him, Jack, for the questions to get the answers out of them by this afternoon.
The so-called secondary study that will be done when?
Wednesday. Completely done Wednesday. And we saw the first part and it looks good. So that's why I'm jacking the figures for the Science Museum.
All right. D.
All right.
Profit arts organizations.
Profit arts organizations. I guess I have mixed feelings about this. It's a very interesting topic. And Terry Post, who was a staff member, started a study on how the profit arts organizations do function, but he only talked to six of them. And excuse me, Dave.
You're talking about cinema or what?
I'm talking about profit arts organizations. Will be things like the Peter M. David Art Gallery,
Chanhassen
Theater, Old Log, these things. And it's an interesting topic that I'm sure maybe some of the staff members will go out and get a grant to do after this. We have found some. Terry has found some basic attitudes. That I think are very interesting about profit arts organizations. The six that he did talk to, and one is that, of course, when they go into the business, they go in to make money, and so they go in sort of as much for entertainment and ways to make money. They do not provide additional services, such as arts organizations tend to do, such as lectures, workshops, demonstrations, etc. The other interesting thing that he found out in his short study was that profit arts organizations, how they regard the non-profit arts organizations. They like the existence of the Guthrie. Chanhassen thinks it's terrific to have the Guthrie because it promotes an interest in theater. The Art Gallery thinks it's great to have the Art Institute because it promotes interest in art and gets people over there. So these attitudes are rather interesting. However, they're really cursory findings, and I think the way I'm looking at them now is sort of like a Time magazine box where you have another interesting side study that will be almost boxed in on the page and a very short one-page explanation of what we found with to show that it is an interesting topic, but we simply do not have enough data to do it really.
Scope and time commission.
No.
Is there any indication as to a justification for the feelings of the nonprofit groups that they're really being for the profit groups that are really being helped by the nonprofit groups? I recall when the Guthrie started, there was much apprehension on the part of some of the profit theaters that they'd be put out of business. And of course, just the opposite. I think that theater attendance at profit theaters is way, way up now from what it was before the Guthrie started. Is there that kind of data?
Some of them, well, there's not really data. There's some opinions, and I think some of them said this in the beginning. Or what
some
do you
of them said the antithetical, you know, the antithesis to that also. Like Old Log's attitude towards the Guthrie was when they start doing Arsenic and Old Lace, which is one of their old standbys,
right.
They're ready to shoot anybody that walks into the theater from the Guthrie because
yes.
they can't revive it for another 10 years because the Guthrie did it. So that's direct competition,
right,
from a nonprofit to a profit.
Yes, we get both feelings. Most of them, I say, would generally be positive, and there are some negative attitudes. And this will be as a yes.
This, to me, is somewhat of a dangerous area because, take Chanhassen, you know, somebody that's not knowledgeable is apt to say, how can Chanhassen charge $8 or $12 a ticket, give them a meal, and make a profit, and the orchestra charges $8 a ticket, doesn't give them a meal, loses a lot of money. So I think it's got to be very delicately.
Right. Well, the other thing is, too, none of these organizations would give their finances to us, so we will make no mention of finances on the whole thing. And I don't think that
it's going to have to be really, really briefly addressed.
It will be very brief.
Opinions and comments from people, and that's all.
All right. Profit arts organizations will be handled briefly.
Briefly. Next. Okay. The education system in Minnesota, I think Jimmy here is going to surprise the education department with what he's finding out.
Yeah. I'll surprise myself when I get it done. Starting tomorrow or the next day, I go back to education and we'll get the subcommittee cranked up again. and before the 1st of October, we'll try to get this sort of overview of the education study done, and then I'm going to work in October to get the complete study done, because there is a
lot of... Excuse me, I think it'll be complete for the purposes of our report. It'll be about a 20-page report. With all the basic findings that we need.
And I think what the subcommittee will find, and I think I expressed the subcommittee's view correctly, is that a large amount of money and time is being spent teaching the arts in the Minnesota education system from elementary to college. But some of that money is not expended in the way that is most useful, most productive in terms of delivering art education. Half the money is spent on classroom teacher time, people who only have one course in the arts. And there might be ways, other models, other ways to deliver arts education that would be more successful, particularly in elementary and secondary education, like the specialist, like the visiting artist, like the magnet school, like the field trip. And I think the subcommittee will pretty much come down on and reviewing these other models and talking about where they're being done. And like we only have 20 pages, so it'll be quick. And then a discussion of how much money and how much time and how many programs slightly. That sort of, I call it an overview, and Linda's uncomfortable with that, but that sort of general...
Because we have a far over... Well, yeah. There'll be an overview to that overview.
Okay. Jim, might just give the commissioners an idea of a dollar and time involved in...
I hate to do this yet on Thursday, but as I keep getting... I should have the number solid by now. It's $100 million in arts education, I think. Something like $100 million.
What period of time?
For each year, $100 million in elementary, secondary, and higher education to teach people to either appreciate or perform in the arts. Yes.
What's the context for that? What's the context total spent on education in that same time period?
Well, total for education, I have a tough time with Minneapolis School Board's budget. The Minneapolis School Board budget is $85 million. The University of Minnesota is, what, $176 million. It's very, I mean, in the context, it's only like 5% or 10% of the money. The time is somewhat larger. I think in elementary education, the figure is something like one quarter of the classroom time is spent teaching what the teachers and the specialists and the visiting artists call art. One quarter of the time, which leaves only three quarters to do...
It can't be.
Really?
Okay.
Really? Yeah. I have really sound, good data, and I've gone through elementary education, and it really looks like that.
Yeah.
This report may have more answers than you thought.
Oh, yeah. It's called relevant.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
It's really solid information.
Jimmy is a fine researcher, and as I think most of the staff, we're very careful. We always go on the conservative side, if anything. I think we'll be fully able to back
some very interesting figures I'm going to put there. And it also puts into perspective the dollars that we're talking about and the needs we're talking about at the very top of the pyramid, and there's this broader base that's funneling it into the system.
In contrast to what Jimmy is saying, in the arts, the 29 arts organizations we're talking about total of expenditures of about $22 million. We're talking about 1,227 regularly employed people with about 400 additional guest artists, but with 25,000 volunteers. I mean, the difference is incredible, because we're talking about the top of the pyramid now, those arts organizations that are supplying the art services, and all they're doing is spending $22 million as compared to $100 million in the education system.
And the 17 largest are spending, what, $21 million out of that $23 million?
Right.
I'll give you another education number. I gave this one before, but Carleton College sponsors 284 performances a year, orchestras, operas, recitals, exhibits, poetry readings. The numbers are really big for the education system, and I hope I can get it done. And the 1st of October, I'll have those sort of overview of numbers, and then in October, I'm going to do a sort of more or less complete report, because the education department is kind of up in the air right now about the future of the Department of Education's role in providing or encouraging arts to be provided. They're running a statewide plan, and nobody's done a statewide view of how much arts is available, projections on the state total.
But you will have an estimate of total education money being spent.
Money by October 1st,
because
yes.
It's so important.
That's the first thing I'm doing.
It's so important to put that $100 million in a context rather than just say $100 million.
It might be $125 million, it might be $75 million, but it's something in that range.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Phil, you were first.
I just wanted to observe a little bit facetiously, maybe we're going to find out why the schools aren't teaching people to read and write anymore.
Yeah, this $100 million a year is going to focus away from the main purpose of the study almost.
I was going to say, it seems to me this is one place where you're going to get really challenged.
Why?
How do you better be sure of the face?
We are. Yeah. I think we will be the.
Don't go out and advertise 100 million right now, but I'm going to be very positive with the figures. The survey was designed right. It came in right.
And will the State Department of Education?
By that number that we have, had what? The music department coordinator and a couple other people from the State Department of Education. I used that number at a subcommittee meeting. They weren't surprised.
Added, and there's not one thing going to this report. Every time we write up a quote, too, we call those people up on the phone and say, is this exactly what you said? We recheck numbers. I think there is really, this whole staff is really a bunch of good researchers, and none of us, you know, we feel our name's on the line as much as yours is, and that we're not going to be just tossing out numbers without substantiation, and there'll be, you know, there's checks on everything that's going through here.
I'm not questioning the number, I'm just saying that's going to be a startling.
Well, I think, though, that's sort of a decision that was made early on. It is startling, and a decision made early on to study the art services of Minnesota. And when you do, you know, you may find out that these community organizations are spending only $13,000 a year, but then the education system is expending $1 million a year. And I think that's, you know, that's where it lays right now.
Correct. Let me correct the numbers. $13,000 in income. They're spending like $500.
Oh, they're spending. I'm sorry. Yeah, they're only getting. I'm sorry.
Was there something else in your survey where they indicated it wasn't of much importance how it was spent, and they were poorly prepared, which I think is a real indictment on
the thing from the survey was that a lot of that money is classroom teacher time, salaries for classroom teacher time when they offer painting and music and things like that. But then you looked at, there are a couple questions asking the principals about candidates in the arts for the classroom teacher position, asking them whether or not they thought they were well qualified and whether or not the principal thought that was an important factor when he made his hiring decision of classroom teachers. And you found the principal said no, it wasn't an important factor, and no, they weren't well qualified, but you find out you spend $50 million statewide on elementary classroom teachers teaching the arts. You ought to say something about that, and that's what the subcommittee's point is, that we're going to talk about specialists and visiting artists and magnet schools and the like.
John Darris is next.
Well, I was wondering if the bill proposed by Representative Berglund.
Go ahead.
No,
it's been called to my attention.
To our head of us.
We don't have time to speak in full sentences of commission anymore.
As I understood that bill, it was to give special monies to the State Department of Education to channel the school districts to buy purchase services from arts organizations.
That's right.
And I tried to get a meeting with her, and I scheduled a meeting, the meeting didn't happen. And I'll get back to her as soon as I get back to education, which will be next week, and we'll talk about it, and talk about her bill and the research that was done.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is certainly germane to the whole topic, the overall topic, but I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but anyway, that's the correct synopsis of what the bill is all about. But
the pending session?
It was introduced last time.
And I can tell you what happened. I was talking to her on the phone. She introduced this bill, and it was I don't know how many million dollars to go through the State Department of Education to schools to purchase art services. And then the stadium bill came along, and the amendment to the stadium bill with the arts and everything else. And with that being pushed, she decided to drop it, pull it off the calendar, so that the other could be considered, and it wouldn't be competing, or it wouldn't be a way to fudge the. You know, standing up and being counted for the arts.
The bill started, Mr. Chairman, as an idea. Representative Berglund and some other people at the meeting we had tried to figure out a way to plug. This was just at the major art institution level, the Children's Theater and Guthrie, the kind of little vignette things they do on film, into the public school system. In a way, for the public school system on a municipal or county share sort of proposition to participate. In other words, if the state wanted to put some seed money up and say that we will allow so much in education for the arts, in other words, to purchase a little package for how do you run a theater, how do you run a children's theater, and then if the local school board and, for instance, the county board or somebody like that wanted to get in and put a little money in too, so that you get a broader base support for it. And there was, at least in the Hennepin County delegation, a lot of support for this last year.
One of the things that we have on the agenda to do, assuming time doesn't run out on us, is to sit down after the report is more or less in place, but before we formally adopt it, and meet with a number of legislators who are interested in this whole area
to give them the thrust of the findings in certain segments of the report that are of particular interest to them, and that to me that would be an ideal session, for example, with Linda Berglund.
Well, I just, Steve, I just want to say, if I may, the beauty of that sort of thing is that any arts institution throughout the state of Minnesota could work with any other district school board or municipal organization of whatever kind for educational purposes. You could buy that little program from the Children's Theater, you could buy it from the Duluth Arts Institutions and put it in St. Louis Park or International Falls, you know.
I was really excited about the idea when we got started in the education subcommittee, and there's a person on the subcommittee who represents, or in our view represents, major arts institutions. And her comment to that idea was, and I don't mean it as my comment, was the major arts institutions like the Institute have a particular function, which is to display art, and that function is legitimate, and they ought not be asked to change their functions or add to their functions by doing educational things in order to justify their existence or make their income. And so you get, there's another side sort of the coin, if you understand what I'm saying. She was saying, no, we don't want to provide education as one of our functions because we won't do that as well as the schools will do it. And we're not interested in getting the money that way, just give us the money. Because our function is a legitimate function.
Well, when we met with the four major arts institution board, they were very much interested in getting the money whichever way they could get it.
It's a matter of time.
Special administrators on the board who are responsible for funding organizations. And one of the purposes of this commission is to help direct public attention and public policy as to what's best for the state as opposed to what the educators think is the best and what the institutes.
Well, the issue is in the subcommittee, and it will come out, and I'm sure it will come out to the commission.
I don't want to belabor this, Mr. Chairman, but I think it's one of the pieces of legislation which has a chance. If you're going to entertain that sort of an idea at one stage here, that ought to be one we think about. But the important thing about it was it did have people in politics and people on the boards of the art institutions, some of them anyway, interested. It seemed to be one that applies statewide.
David.
Thanks, John. With regard to the $100 million that's allegedly being spent on teaching art appreciation in our public schools, I would say that alarm bells are going off within my head and where my heart is supposed to be. I think that in the first place, it is true that we agreed that would be an area for study, but what this commission decides to study is not necessarily what this commission is obligated to publish. And I think that we should look very carefully as to whether, I mean, it's very good that we've got this data, but I would look very carefully as to the possibility of it detracting from the benefits of our report. To start with, I think it's apples and oranges, and it might give a very wrong, if the figure is true, and I don't doubt the capacity of the staff in terms of, I think $100 million on that the staff says is certainly being spent on something. I'm very anxious personally to see a breakdown of precisely what that's spent for. I know that every high school in the state has a glee club, for example, and I know that a certain amount of teachers' time is spent on having them sing on a regular basis. I'm not quite certain that that's state support for the arts in the sense that it should be compared to the kind of direct aid that's been spoken of previously here. And I think there might be other examples. I'd like to see that. I know that the publication of a figure like $100 million, particularly when it's not the kind of money that we're talking about, would have a disastrous effect on the legislature. I mean, we're already spending $100 million and you want some more?
Exactly right.
And I just think that would sink us. So I would urge either that we put on the agenda to discuss this matter at our commission at a later time, or the executive committee or whatever. I don't know, it's not a motion, I'm just suggesting this to the group and to the chair, but I think this is a matter that's got to be given very close scrutiny right away before we proceed with it, I should think.
How the material comes out. We've been talking very rough language so far.
It's football marching band.
Yeah, and bulletin board supplies.
A bulletin board supplies?
No, I don't think that, no. I think Jimmy should talk to this as to where the money's going.
About 90% of the money probably is salary and personnel costs. And that money is either salary and personnel costs for art specialists, and in junior and senior high schools, it's going to always be specialists almost. And in the elementary schools, it's sometimes specialists, sometimes visiting artists, and sometimes elementary teachers, prorated for the amount of time they spend singing, dancing, doing painting. Now, across the nation, that's considered as arts education. I mean, I wasn't a political scientist the day I woke up either. I had to start out learning about government, civics, and everything else. I mean, it's you got to learn colors before you can go anywhere else. So if you learn colors in kindergarten, that's part of arts education, is my opinion. But just a second.
Wait a second. Why don't you wait a second? Point I was making is that these things may be justified in and of themselves. I'm not sure they're quite comparable to the other aspects of art support that we have here today. And I don't know that the staff judgment on that matter should be imposed upon the group without the benefit of the discussion. I mean, it's subject to criticism and examination, don't you think, Jim?
I agree. The subcommittee could consider it very closely. We talked about it for 3 or 4 hours. They certainly are different things. It ought to be pointed out that they're different things. But let me say something else. I guess professionally, I was hired to make a report on education, and I am going to report that number at least as far as the commission to the commission. I guess I'd be reluctant to have the commission say no, close down that study because it's going to come up with the wrong number.
I think that you're very seriously misunderstanding what I'm saying, and that's why I wanted you just to listen for a moment.
Okay.
Your duty is to present data to this commission, and you've been very diligent about that. We aren't talking about suppressing things. We're trying to look and see what monies spent are come within the definition of money spent for arts. And I think we're entitled to have a legitimate discussion as to what falls into that category and what doesn't, without it impugning on your professional integrity. And it's not a question of integrity. Your job was to present data so that we could have all the data and then make those kind of decisions. And I don't see any problem. Do you think that's an inappropriate function?
There's no problem at all. The commission's report is entirely the commission's, and there's nothing that will go in that report that doesn't have considerable review by the commission between now and then.
I think we're prejudging this because we really don't have this material in front of us to evaluate in its context.
Does your data provide sufficient information to make those breakdowns?
Uh-huh, it certainly does.
Whether it is going to the
classroom teacher, the specialist, the visiting artist, the extracurricular activities in colleges and universities, every single...
Well we're talking member, now yeah. about the public's elementary and secondary
yes,
and
yes.
university.
It does.
Yes.
It does.
So you can specify the specific elements.
Of what is being expended, what grade level it's being expended on, and what sort of activities involved, whether it's a classroom teacher, a visiting artist, a specialist. All that sort of thing.
Well, I think it is important that we have that specification because I know under the arts we've come some of these activities which most would not consider, and would, you know, the marching band some might consider part of the athletic program, and I think it's very important because I think that $100 million will
have the same effect.
Well, the thickness of it, is that the amount that's spent on marching bands is never going to surface. But the $100 million is going to stand right up here.
May I say something positive too about this report? Or Gene, I should let you speak first.
Well, I suggest this issue is sufficiently significant that it not be stopped at the subcommittee level. I'd like the material brought to the full commission because I do think there's another side to this.
Yes, there's a positive side too in that if you study also. Well, Lou Harris does not make the best case, but I think there is a case to be made for the fact that exposure to the arts at an early age, and he does bring this out in several reports, and the Ford Foundation does too, exposure to the arts at an early age does produce arts audiences. We in Minnesota, I think, feel we have a strong tradition of the arts and a strong support of the arts already. And this education is a large part of I think, the production of arts-interested adult citizens.
No question. I think one of the points to remember is that this is not one large chunk of money coming from the state legislature
funneling through all the systems, ending up each little school, all of the state is spending. This is the result, this is the end result of thousands of individual decisions all over the state, of state budgets, of local school board budgets, local individual school budgets, local principals, local boards of education, local sources of money, the local property tax, the state education funds, federal matching funds, all being allocated, and the aggregate, when we pull all this together, is what's being spent all over the state on something, obviously, a large number of people involved in education feel is significant. But let's wait and see how the material comes together. I think it's very hard to discuss this in the abstract, and I feel a little awkward having brought in the figure before you can see it in its context. It's
That's your fault. That's your fault.
And I think it is part of the whole picture. If you're going to look at art services in the state of Minnesota, so many of the other studies that I have read say, gee, we wish we could see what community organizations were doing. We wish we could see what the education system was producing. We wish we could study what the artist is doing, and this study will have it. And so I think there's some validity in it. Maybe other states after this will never study the education system.
Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to wait to see so we can see what we're actually talking about. But my own instincts are that I'm not on this commission to sell a certain viewpoint to the legislators. If this is what our honest research shows, I think the legislators are entitled to this information.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We aren't going to sort of jockeying ourselves around in order to persuade people in a certain direction. We want to give them an honest picture.
I agree. Let the record show that my point is solely that this matter not be accepted on its face and just proceed perforce, but that this full commission be told what it is that these figures mean, and they may be wonderful, and they may be unavoidable whether we like them or not. I just say let's look at them.
Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a report yet that consistently had a very interesting discussion in the abstract. Next.
With it, we had a study on what National Defense was studying on arts. I'm sure we could even come out with a bigger figure.
Yes, the artists in Minnesota.
All right.
Anyway, we'll have a preliminary. I guarantee you'll have interesting reading between now and the next commission. Item F,
Actually, the artists in Minnesota, are any of you on the subcommittee here or for the artists in Minnesota? All right. It started out, well, it's essentially what they tried to study and what they ended up studying are pretty much trying to evaluate what the artist needs, what are the needs of the artists in Minnesota. The sampling that they did of artists is not a valid statistical sampling in terms of the way we did the primary arts organizations. It does give us indicators of what artists do need. The artists, the subcommittee's decision was the best way to find out what artists' needs were to pull out 25 artists out of this response of what 575 who sent back in their questionnaires out of the, 5,000, Mary Ellen, that was mailed out or something like that, and interview these people. And the needs of the artist is almost, I classify it as sort of a feature story. I do think it is valid because it really gives sort of a spirit of what it's like to be an artist in Minnesota. I think they selected the profiles quite carefully to present how people function as dancers, as painters, as actors, what they feel their needs are and what their incomes are. And I think we'll get we get a feeling from them of what it's like to be an artist in Minnesota. It's I guess it's more of a, as I said, it's not statistical, it's more, I don't want to say spiritual, but more the sort of an essence of what it's like to be an artist. It's a differently done study. I think will be interesting. It's going to be relatively short. Of about, I think
more
about
an essay and a profile, statistical.
It really is. It's going to be about a 10-page report. So I think it will. They will be coming forth, I believe, with one primary recommendation for some fellowships going to artists, such as the Bush Fellowship, Bush Foundation does, and that will be their primary recommendation out of this subcommittee.
You will have a draft of that.
I have it already, and I edited it. Gave it to my husband to edit. They're typing it. And we're going to edit it some more. So. They have a needs of the artist subcommittee meeting on Wednesday, and I think we'll then decide on what they they want for their report and what their final recommendation will be. So by the end of this week, we'll see how that report looks. It was an interesting thing. It was a subcommittee who really sort of decided how to do the research for what they wanted to know, and I think they were a very active subcommittee. So it has merit in the way they approach the topic.
Item four.
Okay, this evaluation of arts and arts organizations. This is another one of these organic pieces here that changes. And essentially, it'll go partly to David's question of how good are the arts organizations in Minnesota. And I think you got in the mail my overview of the evaluation, which is now changed again, but which essentially will be going toward two parts. It'll be, it speaks about taking rough and broad indicators to evaluate the quality of Minnesota's arts organizations. And one rather good indicator is what is our audience attendance here. And I've taken Jimmy's probe survey and boiled that down as to the highlights of what the survey and audience attendance showed us. And I think, as you may have heard before or saw in the overview, it shows essentially that we have a 72% of Minnesota citizens have attended an arts event in Minnesota during the last year. And the interesting thing about this figure, and unlike other national studies, is that this figure holds solid for both Twin Cities and outstate. The 72%, I think it's 71.15% and 72 or 71.9% for Twin Cities. It's very very close there. The other thing is that 3 out of 5 of every Minnesotans, no, 40% of Minnesotans have in the last year attended 3 different kinds of arts events, meaning ballet, symphony, museums, not 3 times the symphony, but the different types, showing that I think there is sort of a broad base of support for the arts here. Then we get to the second part of this study, which integrates pretty much the Quality of Life Subcommittee study and some other research we did on the contribution of the arts to Minnesota life. And the 3 parts I see, this was one of these things I reshaped this morning, are that the arts in Minnesota contribute in the sense of giving us some reputation and prestige. Now for this aspect, Michael called, was guided by the National Endowment of the Arts, to call arts leaders in, was it 5 other cities that had been selected by the state demographers being comparable to the Twin Cities, and the whole state composition being similar to Minnesota, essentially with one large city. They were Seattle, were the cities.
Denver, Atlanta, Seattle, Kansas City, and Dallas.
Dallas. And he called arts leaders there to find out their opinions on Minnesota arts, how they valued the arts. And we also called, or he also called, I should say, 3 cultural editors from major newspapers, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the San Francisco Chronicle. And as you will be happy to hear, they all thought it was a terrific place here. Essentially, the people in other cities thought that the Twin Cities in Minnesota were sort of a model of what they'd like to be, that they had fine productivity here, that a reputation for both quality and distribution. The whole state of Minnesota really was well regarded. And we also found this out from the cultural editors. In fact, I think I have part of the study here. I think you might enjoy this quote that Michael got from the Alfred Frankenstein of the San Francisco Chronicle. He says, "I consider the Twin Cities," this is part of a long quote, starts out saying he has very high regard for what we're doing here. "I consider the Twin Cities to be far above such cities as Denver, Seattle, and others of comparable size. As a matter of fact, the quality of art in the Twin Cities can and should be related to that of San Francisco." That I have a question mark myself about. "Chicago and Los Angeles. Don't worry about what the Easterners think of you. Many of them believe there are still wild Indians west of 10th Avenue. Thank you for the opportunity to reflect on the Twin Cities once again." We won't be considering the wild Indian statement when we go to the legislature, putting that in, but I think it's kind of fun. The Lon Tuck, the cultural editor of the Washington Post, said that the performing arts in your Twin Cities metropolitan area appears to be a model for the level of consistency it's enjoyed over the years. Your Twin Cities is very conscious of the need for mandating very high standards of quality over generations, both through accomplishments of the organizations and the leaderships of them. We really have some very nice things. We didn't have to beg at all, and I think 16 out of 16 people say very fine things. In fact, the people from Atlanta said they're coming to this city, to the Twin Cities, to study how we run our arts organizations here. So I think we can prove that we do get the, one of the contributions to the arts is national prestige. A second one, and this will be covered later on too, is the aesthetic contribution the arts make to the very social fabric of our life. And here we have essentially quotes from people out of the made the Quality of Life Subcommittee, what they felt the contribution here. And then another rather hard-hitting one is the economic impact of the arts in Minnesota. And here I took both what the Quality of Life Subcommittee business leaders had essentially said about how having the arts here draws employment, creates business, etc., plus tracing the expenditures or mentioning the expenditures that the arts funnel every year into the community. And talking about the, I think I estimate about $21.5 million that goes directly back into the community. Out of the $23 million in expenditures, I took out the figure for guest artists, figuring we looked at the organizations who have high guest artist figures, and all of them are Twin Cities arts organizations, which means they're probably bringing guest artists from outside the state. So we have a fairly solid figure of what's going back into the state. What?
I'm not sure that's true.
That's on the expense budget.
That all of the only, no, it's not true.
What?
Outstate groups use guest artists also.
We, the accountant and I went through those, Mary Ellen, we found 90%
yeah,
from
by the group, Fargo Moorhead, their symphony is totally guest artists.
Okay, well we can talk about that, but I want a conservative estimate. I did not want to be ballooning this out.
Just a little statistical problem will allow you to reach a consensus on between yourself before you report to us.
Right.
I think it's important on those numbers to not only talk about the dollars actually spent, in terms of the, particularly all the expense budgets of all the organizations and figure what that goes into, but to take the multiplying factor.
Well, we don't have the multiplying factor, but we do have a quote, and this is one thing the Quality of Life Subcommittee did come up with Amos Ames, who talks about the repercussions of spending arts, where it, how it affects other businesses such as restaurants, etc.
It's either the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce or the Downtown Business or one of those organizations has made a study, and you could probably get it from them or see me afterwards. I can get
okay, fine.
Well, the Citizens League, that Citizens League study has a multiplier factor in it. I don't know how good it is.
That's what
but it wasn't just the fines, the people they draw into downtown to restaurants and businesses and things like that as the performance is going on.
They talk about the multiplier five of how many times the dollars are re-spent, and then you have all these other groups. I have not, and I don't think any of us have really ever seen a good, a lot of other states do say $1 gets you seven or you know, this whole factor, and I have not seen a terribly good report that actually substantiates.
Well, take a look at either the Citizens League report or the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce. And I wish I had the right organization that's done a study of it and has statistics to back it up. Because it, all of a sudden it takes you from a $21 million industry to a $100 million
isn't
industry.
Isn't that what the Chamber of Commerce did in Minneapolis?
Well, they've done. They have a statistic. They've done run a statistical study on it, and they've come up with.
Well, the major study, Andy, that was done like this statewide level, which I think we have to be concerned about, is Seattle. Lou Harris came in and did their thing, and, their analysis was that their arts industry is $12 million. Sorry, ours is 22 or 21 in terms of the expenditure. 23. Okay, in terms of the expenditures of the arts organizations directly, and Seattle's is $12 million. And their economic impact with the multiplier is considered to be $32 million. That's how they got to it. That was how Lou Harris applied the factor. So it's a bit over two in terms of the multiplier if you look at his study. But if you look at somebody else's study, you're going
to... Whatever you do, I just think it's important to show that you have an economic impact beyond the expense.
We go to that. We address that topic. I am not willing to, frankly, put a multiplier number on it as a researcher. But we do talk about the effect it has on all the business around it. And I think
could find some
ranges
and at least note them.
Well, I think actually what makes a stronger case, frankly, are the statements that the Quality of Life Subcommittee came up from all the business leaders in the Twin Cities saying how they feel it draws in
no question
why people
that.
Work here.
It helps, but I think the economic impact is going to influence the legislators.
Okay, we'll see what we can dig up.
We'll make a note to discuss
Somebody ought to talk to Frank Boddy about this over here at the university. Frank has done so many studies of this sort of thing. And if he doesn't actually have worked out one, you can depend on Frank. Now, I've gone through two or three of these multipliers on other things, and I distrust them thoroughly. In other words, if you really get challenged on them, then you probably can't support them. Most people can't.
I'd like to avoid.
Frank Body has one, I believe him.
Yeah, we're trying to avoid. That's why we're being so careful, because I will certainly talk to him, and we're trying to avoid anything, because you know how it is, like Jimmy Carter's nephew in jail. You find one sort of rotten apple, and pretty soon, you know, the legislature, whoever, newspaper people will sort of focus in on that thing.
I think of equal interest and importance that if, for example, of the five most comparable state metropolitan areas, Seattle is one, for example, and the total art expenditure in Seattle is 12, Seattle, Washington, compared to 23, Minnesota. That says something, just as some of these other things says something. But let's, again, I'd rather see what the material is in the report before we start worrying about what's going to go in and out.
I think that we should, as was pointed out earlier, that we should make sure that there's some balance in the report and that the quotes from newspapers or otherwise, that Minnesota is not always number one, that some at least think that Atlanta is number one, because I think you run the risk of pushing people into conclusions on selective
I think
data.
It's fairly, I'll show you the write-up. I sent it back with the writer. We have a writer integrating these three facets, and I will certainly mail it out to you, because it's a political section. I think that the legislators will be interested in reading, and we're trying not to overstate anything. You know, let the facts speak for themselves. As a researcher, that's sort of my feeling on how it should. If you have a strong case, the truth always speaks for itself, and you don't have to balloon it up.
I think the staff has gotten the impression that the commission is a bunch of very eager editors waiting for final draft that they can have fun with. Let's go on. Item five.
Okay. All right. This Art for the Future, which is, will probably have a new title, is sort of this bridge section of which I spoke earlier. And it goes beyond between what is going on in Minnesota now and how we will provide for the arts in the future. There'll be two parts to this section, and one which will be essentially Jimmy's trend model will be an explanation which he'll go through with you now as to why the arts need support from both the private and public sector financing. I am writing a section that is essentially a rationale as to why the arts should be supported. If I can briefly state this, it's sort of looking at the arts in economic terms. I don't know how many of you are economists, or I'll try to explain this simply without being too simple-minded. I hope to do the legislature too. That the arts are, the basic reasoning I have is that the arts are what you call mixed commodity. You have, Jimmy, if you can help out on this, I'd be happy. You have items produced in this economy which are private goods, bread, milk, which you can each buy, which are sold for profit, and which face a market test as to whether they can exist. The arts are somewhat of a private good because people do pay for them in the sense of earned income. However, they are not entirely a private good because they're not completely paid for by their earned income. If they were a private good, they'd be something like the profit sector, more of an entertainment industry that's out to make money. All right, then are arts entirely a public good? A public good is anything that if you offer it to one person, is offered to the whole community, something like air pollution control, national defense,
domestic order,
something, policemen, something that you cannot, a private individual cannot buy, that can be produced by the government or even the private sector. Now the private sector, in fact, we were talking about what is a public good that's being paid for by the private sector, and our example is the Governor's Commission on the Arts, which is for... Listen, we have quotes to go around. I just found definition yesterday of a culture from the 60s, which is called the shot heard around the room. So the, we... the things you're not printing are as interesting as what we do print. Anyway, so the arts are not truly a public good because they are people can be excluded from them in the sense that
You can put walls around the theater and keep people from seeing the performance.
Yeah, they're not out there for everybody. Yeah. All right, so we looked at them as a mixed commodity. An example of this, to which we will compare the arts, is higher education, where they do earn some income. However, because as a private good, but as a public good, for the public good they do, they are supported by both private and public sectors. And this will be our argument leading into why we the arts do get private and public sector support and why they should continue to get it and how we will finance it along these lines. But I think so many of the studies we've seen have never gone to the rationale as to why the arts should be supported at all, except to say they're excellent or they're there or they're part of our culture. And hopefully this will be a little tighter analysis, and we'll be talking about the two objectives of financing art, which will be to preserve and promote excellence and also to promote the distribution of arts resources. And this will work into our funding proposal, I believe, as to the main thrust of our funding proposal, etc. Does anyone have any questions on this? Or
there's two conclusions to argue.
The preservation and promotion of excellence and quality, and also the distribution of arts resources. And I think, in fact, we had talked about these as being the two things we want to promote it to promote. And over the weekend, I read several other national reports, and they said the same thing in different terms. There are two objectives to promote art: the aesthetic objective, the social objective, quality, public service. I'm always kind of happy to hear when the two things we kind of select out are echoed. And we'll talk about that. The private and public sector support has been a little chaotic, and again, it's somewhat like higher education. It has promoted a certain excellence and a certain universality. And we'll be making a strong comparison here, and then to give the rationale as to why to support it at all, rather than just coming out and the commissioner saying you've got to because you already do. And I'll mail this out to you when I finish with this section. As I said, I'm trying to write it simply and cogently, but as part of this bridge section. Then comes Jimmy's trend analysis.
Before we get to Jimmy's, when will you have a draft of this ready?
I would have had it finished this morning. I worked on it. It'll probably be, let's say I'm planning to finish it up tonight and have it to the typist tomorrow. We're all working 14 hours a day, including all weekends. So that's where that
one is. Keep asking these questions because we're obviously trying to dovetail this in some early date.
This is why this is sort of a critical area, too, that I'm trying to get done, because it does lead into our funding. I think it works into the funding scheme. And if it does, if the commission doesn't like it, we can toss it out, too. No ego, but it does make the whole process that we're going through seem rather rational, I think.
Okay, Jerry.
Do you want to go and have me walk through the trend analysis, or do you just want to leave that until we finish the outline? Do you want to go through it now, at this point?
Why don't you tell them first what it is?
Okay, the point of the trend analysis is to take financial, primarily, information from 69, 72, and 75 for the entire art system. Look how those numbers project to 78, 81, and 84, so that we can give you a bottom line figure of how much to recommend to the legislature to appropriate in the next biennium and on through 1984. The information is based on two studies, the major study being the primary survey that Mary Ellen did, which we had 230 out of 315 respondents in 1975. The second part of the study was the trend study, which we got 17 out of 21 respondents. Now, if you look at the 17 organizations that responded, in 1975, those 17 organizations spent 90% of the money that the 230 organizations altogether spent. So that even though we're only dealing with a fraction, a small number of organizations back to 69, we got 90% of the expenditures running on through, so that we can project beyond this 90% to 100% and then carry that number and continue it on. The major categories of the trend study, there are two: income and expenditures. Income, you look at earned income and contributed income. And contributed income breaks down into public sector support, private sector support, and what is called organizational support, which amounts to earnings on endowment, taking money out of endowment to make up deficits, and like a money interest earned on money, operating money that's in the bank until you spend it, that's organizational support. In the expenditure side, we have the four major subtotals, which are salary and personnel, purchase services, supplies and materials, and other operational expenditures, insurance, heat and light, et cetera, in the total. The only two numbers that we actually project out into the future, out into 1984, are total income and total expenditures, because they're real solid numbers. If we look at the trends in the subtotal lines under both income and expenditures up to 1975 to get some sort of feel of where that is going, and then we take those percentages and we project those onto our projections of the totals out to 1984 to get the dollar values that we have. If we're going to do the trend study now, the place to turn to is...
Can I say one thing about this, by the way? Before you all get scared of the amount of material here and all the tables, much of what you see before you today are the appendices. I think we all feel very strongly that all our, what will appear in the report will be essentially a 20-page overview of how the trends look with all the supporting data, and the appendices will document the research methodology that's gone behind this. We have, I think you should talk about the Ford Foundation. Yeah, and all this. Okay. We're not sort of off the wall in the study.
Okay. The three pieces you should have are a thing called the Trend Study, September 14th, 1976.
Mailed to you.
Which was mailed to you. And if you don't have a copy, I have an extra copy. A thing that has handed out today that has page 12 on the top of it. And another piece that has capital fund income. It's about five pages in the table, the first page. Capital fund income, 1969 to 1976. Michael, we need a first copy. You got that?
I just gave mine to you.
First page, there's the second page. I'm sorry, this just has to be really difficult. So we're on page 7 of the first memorandum. And that starts four pages of tables, which are the critical findings of the first part of the study. Income in actual dollars.
Does everybody have page 7?
Income in constant dollars. Income as a percentage of total income, each of the subtotals as a percentage of total, and the increases, the non-inflationary increases in income, and then the exact same thing for expenditures in tables 12 through 15. Now, these income lines, of course, are projected from the 17 organizations to the 315 of the total system, based on what the 230 are.
Tell them how you did it.
How I did it is fairly
maybe
complex.
Don't tell them how you did it.
Not at this point, yeah.
The statistical method for getting there is outlined in the memorandum.
And the percentage that is not projected, the percentage that is actually hard reported data is in table 17 of the second section, if you want to look it up. It always remains above 80% except for public sector support, which goes down to 60% because a lot of the little organizations get most of the public sector support in the state Archbold. The interesting thing about this table, these first four income tables, is not only the fact that in 1975 they made $22,422,729 actual dollars, but also table 10, which shows that earned income from 69 on to 75 remained at a fairly constant 47%. And that 47% being constant throughout suggests two things. One, that our data is very good, and two, that the industry is really reliable. Or if there's a slight fudge on both of those factors, they even out. So that we have a 47% right across the line suggests that we're working with a really good industry. Yeah. It's not moving all over town in terms of where it's getting its money. And to that extent, we can talk confidently about projections into the future on the total income and total expenditure line, because we have a solid industry.
I'd also like to add here, too, that Jimmy and I and the rest of us have been looking at other reports in other states with arts organizations. Until they get above, $500,000 in a year, their earned income follows the same pattern. This is it's very interesting. This is a national trend for earned income. Only when you get to organizations of $500,000 and above does it jump up to 55% of their budget is earned income. So I think we will document all the supporting data on this.
Yeah,
this type of figure, if you may interrupt for a second, is a good example of the research that we've done that is not only important to the public sector and the state arts board and state legislation determining what the budget should be for the year, but the arts organizations themselves in terms of what their goal for an earned income should be, and in grant-making institutions, private grant-making institutions, Bush Foundation, St. Paul Foundation, etc., and saying to X organization that's coming before it,
your income is not close to the average that it should be for your particular industry. This is a statistically valid conclusion. It based, it tracks not only with what's been done internally in Minnesota, but elsewhere.
Okay, the other thing I think
you should look at that on by organizational type, because museums have a little bit more difficulty.
Right.
But that when
right.
that number is broken down by organizational type, that's the indication. That
Mary Ellen, I think we'll study that aspect of it.
That
you
was
too.
The recommendation I was alluding to earlier before we got into this.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that will go to organizations rather than.
Okay. Now, the second important line, two pairs of lines: private sector support and public sector support. In that same table 10. You look at private sector support, it drops off from 36.9% of total income to 24.9% of total income, while public sector support jumps from 7 to 16.5% of total income. It's sort of, the decline in private is sort of taken up by public. Now, that requires an explanation. And if you look to the third section of what I handed out, the one that says capital fund income, 1969 to 1976, you'll find a table that explains what happened to private sector support. These are just the capital fund campaigns to build facilities between 1969 and 1976 in Minnesota. If you look all the way over to the right-hand side to the column that says total, you'll see that $49,185,332 has been raised in that period to build buildings, and that 95.5% of that money came from the private sector.
Well, that's not just building buildings. That's
the endowments is not included in that. No, there'll be a $5 million addition to this when endowments is done. This is just capital funds. This is just building. Monies.
One of the reasons you have to consider this too is it. Well, for one thing, it will explain private sector support, but there's sort of an old saw that you hear. You heard, I think, more often in the early 70s and 60s. If we give too much in public dollars, the private sector will drop off. You know, and this is or vice versa. You know, you can't one will let up if the other won't. And this is one reason we have to have a more thorough analysis of really what is happening with income.
I think it's on the page before we get to these tables, the beginning of these tables where I talk about the three ways of explaining that decline. Or, you know, it's either the private sector looks at public sector support and says they don't need it anymore because public sector is doing it, or public sector looks at the tough condition the private sector is in and say, well, we have to do something in order to save these institutions, or they're not related. And public sector is simply going up as a function of government expanding and community life, and private sector is going down because of the capital campaigns, pretty much. And those are the sort of three basic paths that we're exploring, and that's why
right,
we have this camp.
Well, I don't want to dispute the conclusion, but I know that in the major Minneapolis organizations, and Atherton, you can correct me, that the objective has always been to keep the annual support at about an equivalent level while you're carrying on your endowment campaigns. And I think this has held true. In fact, there have been slices. And the thing I would look to, and I don't know if you really have it in here, is that this is a percentage of total income, and I haven't
right.
figured it out as
operating income.
Yeah, but if it's the dollars, in other words, I would in numbers, the private support probably went up slightly, but the total budget
right.
went
right.
up substantially. So you
right.
have this inflationary effect.
Table 11 will tell you how much
okay.
private support went up. It went up between 1972 and 1975, 11.7%. Between 69 and 72, 28.1%.
Well,
that's in constant dollars now. So the
yeah,
private sector is giving more
real
money.
Dollars, which are the in this sense more important. Going back to your table 8,
it goes up considerably more in real
doubles,
dollars.
You've doubled your private support,
mm-hmm.
more than doubled it. And see the symphony mm-hmm. and the Minneapolis Society of Fine Art programs are a good big chunk of this, and they both doubled within this period, at least doubled. I don't really
both
know the.
Which we're also having building campaigns.
Yes, that's right. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
So I guess you know you get a rather interesting. It's difficult in many ways to make conclusions because the conclusions may come, and you almost have to let the figures sit. Seems to me.
Yeah, I think you can't say that this drop is because of the capital fund campaigns, just because of increased government interest and contributions.
Yeah, but the government increase isn't enough to explain private sector support falling off from 36 to 24. I mean, even though public sector
the real the percentage is produced by the increase in the public side. But to say that, to imply that private support has declined, it's declined relatively.
Relatively.
But it's not
right.
declined because it's doubled.
Right. That's what they
were having in the well, I think that's the type of statement that has to be qualified by the reference to the fact that actual dollars have doubled in the period. Budgets have increased by a certain factor, which is greater than the increase in actual dollar contributions, even though dollar contributions have doubled in that period. The slack, in fact, has been picked up by public funding, which has also increased from a much lower base than the level that annual giving was at when it did go through its doubling process.
Public funding in 69 was 20% of private funding. It's gone up to the point where it now is approximately 60% as much.
So there is an explanation that the figures are internally consistent, but you've got to make a couple of statements and then get there. And again, I think when we get some of this concealed into a final report,
is the implication will be that private funding has, for some reason, rather declined.
I think the point that will come out about this is that when you have capital fund drives going in Minnesota, it affects your private support dollar distribution. That large capital fund drives will draw private sector support away from operating budgets to capital fund drives.
I'm not sure that's true.
What are you saying, though?
We show for the whole state it's true.
Yeah, but are you saying if the institute has a capital fund drive, that means the Walker might not be getting an increase in their
operating
funds because the institute's out raising money? Because
yes.
I don't think you can sustain that. In other words, I think that there is very substantial evidence that a large fund drive will increase annual giving.
Michael, why don't you give him the quote from Walker?
Well,
I hope I didn't write it.
No, you did not. As I talked to Don Borman, who gave us the information, the fact of the matter is that when there is a capital drive on, one of the things that they'll do to use as an incentive or inducement to get a potential corporate or private giver to give to his campaign will be to say, look, you won't have to. The memberships that they normally go after are sometimes used as a way of saying you won't have to buy a membership. If you give to this capital campaign, you don't have to buy a membership. Well, if he doesn't have to buy a membership, then the capital monies can't be used for membership, for what the membership is normally used for, which is operating budget. And they do this a whole lot, I'm led to believe, in terms of raising this money. This is quite an inducement. So what you really do have in effect is the decrease in the amount of money you're able to spend in day-to-day operating while you're doing this capital grant. And he wasn't sure if it picks up again to the same level that it was when you're finished, because you may have some drop-off that you can't retrieve.
Yeah. I don't want to argue the facts, but the Walker, which I'm familiar with, and I think Don was probably correct in that, but the Walker is really an aberration in all of these things, because the Walker was privately supported for such a long time, and they've never had a guarantee fund of over $50,000 to $100,000. And that's why I don't want to get into the facts, because I would, you know, you'd really have to look at the orchestra or the institute, the two best examples. But
all I'm really trying to say is that yes, actual dollar income does go up. Yes, constant dollar income in every single category does go up. The private sector is doing more in constant dollars than they did before. It's just that when you look at income, where the money is coming from arts organizations, it used to be 36.7 and now it's 24.16. And when you look at that from an institution's perspective, that's a slightly different funding mechanism than it was before. And that's all this trend study says.
Not only that, but it also shows the increasing impact of public funding on these institutions of all sizes and their increasing dependency on that source in terms of, if it were suddenly turned off, the end effect of it. A few years ago, that might have been almost insignificant. If it were to happen today, the results would be traumatic, to say the least. And I think that's a conclusion that people have stated. Willy-nilly, that is the posture right now in the arts industry.
To go to another table like that, and the only other important thing I have to bring up out of these eight tables is table 14, where we're talking about the breakdown of expenditures as a percentage of total expenditures. And you see that the salary and personnel line decreases from 61.7% of total expenditures to 48.8% of total expenditures, while every other line as a percent of total expenditures goes up over the whole entire period. And these numbers And then if you look down to the next table, table 15, where purchase services goes across at 63 and 65, and other operational expenditures go across at 38 and 41. When numbers go across like that, that means exponential growth. It's the sort of thing where the population, in this case the expenditures, double every 10 years. In this case we're talking about 8 years. So that we're talking about other operational expenditures doubling every 8 years, and it's an exponential increase. I'm really uncomfortable about this table because it makes it really difficult to talk about expenditure patterns in the future. So that the trend study is going to pay attention mostly to income, and only mentions that the breakdown looks like this over the last period, and not attempt to make any accurate or close predictions on where that money is going to go in these four subtotals in the future.
We will predict overall expenditures, but not the trends in categories. That's the thing, because it's too unstable.
And we'll report this table, but you see, I think other operational expenditures and supplies and materials reflect, again, buildings that have to be heated, insured, supplied, and the like. And I think that's partly the reason for that. And I don't know quite what to make of this table yet.
Well, let me just suggest, I don't want to argue the things, but I think that most of the major organizations, they have tried to keep their salary costs, the number of people on the payroll, as constant as possible, and in most cases have gone down, some by attrition. They have to buy power, and that's gone up, in the case of the Walker, about doubled. And they have to buy all the other materials, so that the table really doesn't tell you much, except that they, you know, they've let people go, and I would assume this is the case with the society. And other places where they just had to buy it, it's gone up. I think that's something you could probably state.
I think it says something else. It's very important, which is that table, to me at least, is the statistical proof that the organizations are in fact cutting down, because in an inflationary period, when their revenues are not meeting their expenses, they are reducing the total amount of service available. The areas of service that are beyond their control are heat, light, air conditioning, insurance, factors like that, and I suspect that a good bulk of those increases occur in those categories. Now, the figures are distorted in this particular time period because it represents the coming online of new physical facilities in the major organizations and the difference in operating expense that those would have produced. And that's something we have no choice of. There's no way we can take that out of the data, because the period we're operating in, we can't go back any further and have these figures at least meaningful in terms of currency, and we obviously can't go forward. So we've got a problem there in digesting them, but I think that's clearly one of the elements in it.
I think rather than saying a cutback in services, you're talking about a cutback in the number of people supplying services. If you look at the data from the primary survey, very few organizations have cut back in services. So they're asking more of the employees they have. But Guthrie cut its company by a third, and they double the number of productions they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what's happening. Right.
I think you can find a number of national studies making the point that personnel cuts or personnel salaries not keeping up with inflation is a form of subsidization. The personnel themselves are subsidizing arts organizations, and that's a point that several other studies do bring up.
Well, Steve, I think one thing this leads me to conclude is that the major organizations that would have an effect, I think primarily here it would be the St. Paul Arts and Sciences, the Institute and the Orchestra, really ought to study these things and to react to make sure that the conclusions that come from these as a researcher are to some degree consistent with what you found in the marketplace. Because I think that you can be, you know, there can be reasons where the figures, the tables don't seem to mesh, but in fact there are reasons behind them.
That's
really a job for us to do,
in analyzing the data after it's been produced in the statistical basis. And that's part of the work that when you see Linda's report, at least the draft of it, those are some of the questions that come in and out and as we refine it. All right.
I think there should be one more couple of comments. Did you want to do another thing? I wanted to talk about the validity of this trend study. Maybe, Jimmy, you could talk, in case any of you have any questions in your mind as to how we're doing this.
Well,
Yeah, that's the next section as we project into the future. You mean the Ford Foundation?
The Ford Center.
Yeah, we're coming to the projections now.
Okay, fine. We have a number of people excited about the way we're doing this.
Okay, now we want to project from 1975 to 1984 to fulfill the governor's charge about the short-term future of the arts.
Page 15, this is.
We're going to be on page 15. The first thing we need is an inflation rate so that we can reduce everything to constant dollars and pump it back up again in actual dollars once we've projected our constant dollars out to 1984. Now, there are three inflation rates that we're going to be using throughout. One published by the Office of Management and Budget, and two published by the Congressional Budget Office. They publish both a low rate and a high rate. And given the nature of the times and the election, I think the administration figure is slightly low, and the high figure for the CBO is considerably high. So most of the time when I talk, I'm going to be talking about the CBO low figure that runs down the middle of the table, although I think it's going to be slightly lower than that, the inflation rate into the future, from what I've seen, what I've heard. But you can see that we're talking about three different rates, and as inflation occurs, of course, these projections will have to be corrected. Looked at again, gone back to, and said, well, inflation was only 5.5% in 77, so we ought to reduce that projection out into the future. Okay? So those are the inflation rates, and table 16 on page 16 turns those inflation rates into the consumer price index for 1976 to 1984. Now, the problem is to project our constant dollar figures for the arts industry from 1969, 72, and 75 out into the future. And to determine what our possible expenditures and income are going to be out to that point. So if you'll turn to page 20, this is the place in this memorandum where I talk about how to project how you do a trend analysis. And basically what you do is you try to predict a straight line into the future if you can. If the data support a straight line, use a straight line because it minimizes error on both sides. And then even though you're going to error slightly, you don't complicate your line considerably to take care of that error. You just correct as you move on into the future and predict in a range rather than predicting right on top of the number. And the particular formula of the line is a regression line is given there. And the problem is to decide what the increase is between 69 and 72, how much that looks like the increase between 72 and 75 in constant dollars, and talk about whether or not you can talk about a straight line prediction. And for both income and expenditures, you can. And that's in table 18.
The next page, right.
If you take a model that says that between 69 and 72, income increased by a half, and between 72 and 75, it increased by a third, and between 75 and 78, it increased by a quarter, and then a fifth, and then a sixth, and then a seventh, etc. That's a straight line model. If you take one half of the 1969 income, you get $3,280,060. And you add that onto 69 income, you get the $9 million figure. And then you take one-third of 72 and you get the same number, so you got a straight line, and you add that on, you get the $13,120,000 figure in projected value. Now, if you look at the first column in that table, that's actual values. And there's only a 4.9% error in 72 and a 5.8% error in 75, which means that we're only missing by about 5% projecting out into the future. That's just based on the 69 data with this model. Okay, so that we know that in 72 and 75 we had a slight error. So to correct for that error, and what will have to continually be done with this information as we approach 1984 is correct. And table 19 on page 22 does the corrections. We get projected increases to 1984 based on the 1975 numbers and projected values and constant dollars for both income and expenditures. Now, this straight line model is adopted from the Ford Foundation report. They set up a regression analysis based on logarithmic functions and a whole lot of other things and did a straight line projection for the arts out into, I can't remember how far, I think 1981 when they did their report. Yeah. And we called them up and talked about them and talked about this model and talked about straight line projections. And to the extent that we use constant dollars, we don't have to use the logarithmic function because we get a constant increase, a roughly constant increase out to 1984. And this is really solid. I mean, we're getting a fairly straight line projection. And it follows fairly closely the actual reported data in 72 and 75 if you project it just on 69 figures. Okay, I'll slow down. All right.
Have you tried to figure out what the state budget has done during this period?
No.
I say that only partly facetiously, but I suspect that if you were to put a, you know, most state funding budgets over, you'd have the same type of increase.
Same type of increase? as a percentage?
Okay, now
I'm sitting here with a number that's projected, a dollar number right down to the last dollar that's projected out to 1984, and I want to give myself some range of error. So tables 2021 and 2023 provide those ranges.
Tables.
All right, starts on page 26. The first table, table 20, is these constant dollars that I've been talking about, and the either reported values for 69, 72, and 75 are the projected values for 78, 81, and 84. Constant dollars all the way. Now you have a lower boundary and a higher boundary for these projections, and the lower boundary for 78 is based on a minus 6%, and the higher boundary is based on a plus 6%. 8% for 70, 81, and 10% for 84, which are considerably bigger errors than you recall we made when we made the projection on 69 data through to 75. Now, each of these constant dollar values, both for income and expenditures, for the higher and lower boundaries, are projected in the next three tables for all three inflation rates, the OMB rate and the two CBO rates of inflation, the same schedules, so that we have a whole range of values that we're talking about. And that takes you through those tables. You can see that, well, let me talk about the tables in a minute. The lowest number you're ever going to get is for the OMB rate, the lower boundary, table 21, on both income and expenditures. And the reason for that is because it's the lowest inflation rate, and it's my error, 6% on the underside. So that in 1984, you're talking about total expenditures of $53,623,554 at the lowest rate of inflation. The highest rate you'll ever get is the higher boundary in table 23, which is $80,256,355. There's a range from $53 to $80 million, $27 million range. I can say with 95% confidence that the numbers for those years will not fall outside of those two ranges. It's going to be at least 53, and it won't be more than 80.
And that would be the type of thing I would end up in the report. And you've got all the statistical data as a backup.
Right. Okay.
That compares to the 23 million
currently. Now that we're just about through it, if you go to the last set of tables, the one that has capital funding income on the top.
The new section that came out today.
Okay. The National Commission on Cultural Resources has done a study on arts organizations. I'm on page 2, table A of that. Has done a study on arts organizations.
Does everyone have this, by the way, that starts out capital fund income? That's the study we're talking about now.
It's on the table.
Has done a study of arts organizations across the country, and it's concluded that arts organizations in the recent past, the last couple of years, have cut back 6% in order to avoid deficit funding, deficit spending. And that if they had the money, if they had the money, they would have added 6% more in programs, if the money were available, justifiable programs to their budget. So they figure a 12% increase is what is reasonable in expenditures. What we really are, the needs of the art nationally are 12% more than they are. They take the last 6%, the programs that should be added, and cut it in half and make it 3% to give them a really conservative estimate of 9%, a 9% increment larger than current expenditures to say what the arts really need. And this is the question we've been talking about for a while, what the arts need, you know, where is that number?
I think one of the reasons, by the way, for bringing this NCCR figure on the primary survey and from Mary Ellen's talk throughout the state from people, they talked about drop programs, but we didn't really have programs they dropped or couldn't undertake, didn't you say, because of budget cuts. And we had no solid data, though, as to how people felt it affected their budgets not to be able to undertake a program or to have to drop a program. So we went to this National Committee on Cultural Resources, which I guess was what their report came out last year or the year before. And this little brown book, which is a very good study. This is the short version, obviously. But and felt that it was important to project for a program such as this. So this is why we felt this was a solid figure that could be projected into budget expenditures for the future.
Just into expenditures. So that you build the 9% increment on top of expenditures, and you project it for constant dollars in the first part of that table out into 1984 with that 9% increment. You project it in actual dollars, although the 9% is only built on actual dollars. It's not on constant dollars. The figure is for actual dollars. The three inflation rate schedules again through 1984 with the lower and higher boundaries in there and the reported projected figure for the ranges of error all the way through 1984. Now, so now we're talking about three sets of numbers. And this is the point where we start talking about the final draft. We're talking about three sets of numbers. One, projected income. The second one is projected expenditures. And the third one is the NCCR 9% increment. What would it take to meet income, simply income as it's currently going on in the future, what would it take to meet expenditures and to make up the deficit, because we're talking about a $3 million deficit at least in 1984, and what would it take to do an adequate program in 1984? And that's Table B. Those are actual dollars, the boundaries, and the column that I always want to talk about, actually, the column that's probably 40% right, I mean, there's a 40% chance that it doesn't miss by more than $10,000 one way or the other, is reported projected, that middle column. Those are the figures that were actually, that's my actual projection, the one I feel most comfortable with. And that falls right about in the middle of the boundary. The higher side is a little bit higher because of the different inflation rates. So, that's where the arts will be in 1978, 81, and 84 in terms of either income or total expenditures or that 9% increment. Now, if you look at where the money should come from.
Now, let me just go back. One second for my slow mind.
Okay.
The reported projected,
yeah.
1984, income is $63 million, expenditures $66 million, deficit therefore of $3
million. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The, with the 9% increment, which is what they should be.
Yes, if you look at need, according to the way other people look at need, yes.
It would be 63 versus 72, which is the $9
million. Right, right. That's correct.
And the commission could choose the middle road, or they could take one or the other.
That's a political point, not a slow mind.
Yes.
Okay.
Table wanted to make sure everyone here understood.
Well, that's why the Sunday morning, I think I found the NCCR figure. I called up Jimmy on the phone and filled it in.
It really solves a problem for us, I think. I think we can
really drop programs and things.
The 9% figure.
The 9%
figure. I can't
believe. What ought it be? We know that it's that they're under spending. What should it be? And I think that study will really solve that problem. We can really tie into that well.
Okay.
Table C now takes the 47% earned income, the 25% private sector support that's current, that's the 1975 figure, the 20% public sector, which is a projection. The public sector, you remember, was only at 16% actually. But if you look at that curve is going to hit about 20%. If you look at national figures, it's about 20%. If you look at national figures on private sector for other states, it's about 25%. In fact, they hit 25% in 1972, and it looks like Minnesota is just as like the economy or something is 3 years behind. So that we're at 25%, and they're projecting 25% out in the future. And I think that 47, 25, 28 is a fair breakdown on where the income ought to come in the future. And that, to the extent that you target, that you have a goal for certain sectors of income support, you ought to look at those numbers seriously. I think that, you know, the commission may decide differently, but those are the numbers I feel are reasonable numbers.
So the key thing on Table C is the extreme left hand.
Right, the percent numbers. Yeah, 47, 25, 20. Now, the first 78, 81, and 84 are, again, from Table B before the projected income ones. The second one are the meeting projected expenditures, and the third one is, again, the NCCR 9% increment. And those are the dollar amounts that should come from these various sectors in terms of income to either just meet to meet all the expenditures without running a deficit with expenditures projected out, and to meet that 9% increment. That's where the money should come from. Okay, the final two tables. I took the public sector support section because that's what the commission is primarily referring to, and looked at public sector support in the middle column for projected income, meeting projected expenditures. I didn't pay any attention to the boundaries, in other words, I just looked at that middle column. I projected the NEA funds, and this is a slightly high projection, but I projected NEA funds based on what is currently going on, that's National Endowment for the Arts funds coming into Minnesota, to 1984. I subtracted that, because we don't have any control over that, from total public sector support that we need or expect for any of those kinds of things in 1978, 81, and 84, and came up with Table E, which tells you how much of the remaining public sector support has to come from either state or local sources for each of the three kinds, each of the three estimates of need. Okay.
Wait, excuse me. Okay. The first number for state and local, and the second is just for state.
1978. That first number projected income is for both state and local sources.
And then the ones on the friends are just for state.
That's right. Okay. Now what I did was I looked at 1970. I don't have any projections on municipal. I don't know where municipal funding has been and where it's going. We don't have any data. All I have is 1975. And it turns out 1975 was 44.9% of total public sector support came from the local government. Now, traditionally, presumably, there's a long tradition of municipal and local support. So I simply use that 44.9% figure, and that's why these are in, the state figure is in grants. I use the 44.9% on total public sector support, subtracted that from the state and local, and got a state appropriation. And that's what the trend model says the state appropriation might well be in those years, 78, 81, and 84, to take the state's share of either projected income or expenditures or the 9% NCCR increment.
So if you had a so biennial appropriation number
would be twice that.
Would be twice that.
Roughly
the
twice that
figure.
It would actually would be 1.15 and 1.16 for 77-78, and 80-81 would be 1.7 and 1.8
for yearly.
Yeah.
Biennially.
Right.
For yearly appropriation.
And I must say that these numbers are fairly close to what people are talking about. I mean, if you look at the last legislative session, $2.8 million for a biennial appropriation, you got to consider that that was in the past and the numbers are going to be slightly smaller than these numbers. These numbers would add up to be about 3.1, so that we're not talking about unreasonable boundaries or unreasonable projections.
These are net distributable figures, which has got to be made. Pointed out. Look at the State Arts Council now and their expenditures, their percentage of administrative money.
That's true.
As
that's
a percentage.
True.
And so that ought to be made clear here,
right.
Because there's no money in here for the cost of getting these monies out.
But Corey, it's also true, though, isn't it, that these figures don't assume that money necessarily has to go to the State Arts Council.
No, it doesn't. No, this is state support
state
for arts organizations.
Right.
Right.
Not
to go through somebody, though. I mean, it doesn't have to be administered.
It doesn't include money for artists. It doesn't include money for administration. It doesn't include money for development. It just for the
or
nonprofit
for the community
organizations.
These are the or
needs.
Just a straight.
The whole table is. It's only about operating too. It's not about capital or endowment.
Well, you just said 3.1. Which figure was that based on?
Okay, the 1978 money should be 1,164,000 something.
Yeah,
the state.
You're right. I made a slight error. So that if you look at 77 and 75, it should be about 1.1 million maybe, and 1 million. So it'll only be about 2.1 million actually. It would be under that appropriation. If you looked at 80 and 81, it would be about 1.7 million and 1.83. I mean, the 81 figure is solid, but I'd have to extrapolate. The trend model is based. I didn't do every single year in the trend model because every single year the numbers can move around so much. So that if you look at a 3-year trend period, the numbers are much. The increases are solider. And so right at this point, given my time, I'm down to 3-year projections. But when I draw my lines, I can give you an every single year projection based on the straight lines out into the future.
Let me ask you a question, which is probably the wrong kind of question. Assume I was reading this in summary.
Mm-hmm.
How much would I be reading?
About 20 pages, double-spaced. And you'd be reading the major breakdown in income and the major breakdown in expenditures, and you'd be reading about the inflation rates, a little bit about the inflation rates and the consumer price index.
And this is in our summary report that the legislator's going to have.
NCCR wants to do the same kind of thing, and we'll do it that way.
Trend,
it's pretty simple.
The trend report section is going to be 20 pages.
The final report backed up
by appendices because we.
I'm not really worried about this.
Yeah, right.
I mean, a lot of this stuff's got to go into appendices. But you're saying that for
the
this section we're looking at 20 pages.
In the big report, in the little one, we're looking at 6 or 7, and the tables will be much smaller. And
the summary conclusions may be
right.
One.
It depends on how much you want to go to the legislature with too.
Right. Given my sort of limited experience and. Not limited. I've got a lot of experience in drawing models. Given my extensive experience in drawing models, I'm really happy with this one.
He's been working for the last 2 weeks.
No.
I guess my only concern is that there is a point that I think a lot of us have a feel for this because we're
right.
A part of arts organizations and we can kind of react to these. But if you haven't been living with an arts organization, a lot of these things are very difficult to grasp, and I think that you've got to really worry less about which of the three columns you're picking than you do as to why you're picking any column at all.
This trend, even the 20 pages here, will have an overview, Tom,
yeah.
So we can bring out the highlights of the whole thing. So if so someone can read two pages and find out essentially what we're saying.
But there's no doubt what sentences is the key conclusions and the dollar figures.
But there's also no doubt, I think, that if a legislator wants to have an aide on the Appropriations Committee go through and find out, well, how good these numbers are, that there ought to be an appendix in the final report that does something close to this to say that this is how we got it.
I would be very hesitant to send out this.
An aide, again, even an aide that's going to go through this is going to have a reasonably good feeling for the arts and have to be kind of minored in statistics in college. And I don't say that to demean what you've done, but it's a very complicated procedure.
This is a problem throughout the report, frankly, and we're trying to, this is a lot of sophisticated information. I think that's, we are trying to keep the language as simple and the explanations as simple while being meaningful. And I think it'll turn out all right, frankly.
That's why what we've been saying for some time now is we will have, if perhaps more than one report, in essence. The final definitive report may be this 250-odd page volume, and there may be a very short summary of the key points, key questions and issues and recommendations which are important to the legislature, which did not cover a lot of the areas which are going to be in here, but may be the important tool that's going to be needed for the next session. That question hasn't been resolved yet, and a lot of it is going to depend on what the final report looks like. On the other hand, we do not do justice to all the research that's in here, and the value of these models is that they can be used from now on, year after year, simply updated with figures by the State Planning Agency, the State Arts Board, the State Department of Education, and so on, in terms of making, for the first time, their own projections on the current and the next biennium on the basis of hard figures and data that stands up.
I'd like to say that I think the models are very impressive and would have fail to impress legislators, whether they agree with the conclusions or not. Or we say legislators, anybody looking at this report, too often, I think arts groups have come before funding bodies and said we want an increase of $1 million to $4 million without, why? Well, it seemed like a good number, you know, and that's the impression, unfortunately, that some people in public life got of the arts group, a very unfair impression about this. They'll get a contrary impression from this. I would look forward to the moment at which the chairman of the Appropriations Committee says to Jimmy, now, how did you arrive at that?
Well, that's why I think we call it sort of the bridge section, too, because it is very solid, and I find it.
The first draft of the final report, stated simply and clearly as I can, will be available certainly by the end of the week, I think.
Yeah.
Tom, I think you're underrating the experience of, let's say, legislative assistants. This looks to me pretty well simplified.
Yeah.
That's true. I think they're used to.
It seems to me that this is just about what these fellows are dealing with all the time.
Yeah, well, when I talked earlier, I talk of a prejudice, and it may be properly characterized.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. In responding to David's comment, Minnesota Citizens for the Arts have been talking with legislators ever since the last legislative session, and the one comment I have heard over and over again from those people have been that legislators, individual legislators all over the state, are receptive to the concept, provided the need can be documented. And the problem they have had with this, as in many other areas, the arts are not exclusive in how matters have been presented in the past, is the ability to document with some degree of accuracy and certainty what in fact the need is. This, to me, you can quarrel with some of the policy conclusions and recommendations of it, but you cannot argue with the statistical data and how it was assembled. And to me, that's an invaluable contribution.
Well, and your sample is so enormous.
It's very,
you know, the figures just will not be played with.
And I think that Mary Ellen, the fact that she got these small organizations, is just, it's really, I was certainly most impressed when I first came there, because no other study has ever bothered to study how these small arts organizations function. And I think especially where we're dealing with out-state legislators, where a lot of these very small organizations do exist, it'll be extremely interesting to them to see what's happening in their own communities and how they're operating. I think this is what makes this extremely valuable report.
Well, I don't question for a minute that this has got to be a part of the report. And again, my questions are really directed as to what is going to be the working copy.
This is about 20 pages will be the working copy with an overview stating the highlights.
Okay, let's finish up the outline.
Okay.
Then you thought you were going to have an easy session just reviewing the cell phone.
Yeah.
Next. I would point out that if Mr. Carter becomes a president, Alan Greenspan is no longer going to be in the CEA, and this may change those. Then Alice Rifkin's figures are going to be the ones that are going to control.
Bill, if Jimmy send up updated trend models to everybody. Monthly report. Okay, I think once we establish the need, then essentially we'll be going to this funding of the arts in Minnesota. And here again, this argument that I will have made as to why the arts should be funded and the need for a private and public sector mix, which the proportions which we'll have to wrestle with, will lead into this the whole funding. But then at section 6, again, we'll have an overview. And one of the things we'll have to examine, which Jimmy does after he does his education study, is earned income. Because there are three factors, of course, in an arts organization's income. Actually, four. Well, earned income, private sector support, public sector support, and then also operational support, which we are not going to really address as to ways to improve your organizational support. But we will be going into the first three. And earned income, would you like to talk about that?
I'm pretty tired of talking, but I haven't really considered this one carefully. It just seemed to me that before you talk about why do public contributions, why do private contributions, you ought to have a really solid analysis of earned income other than that 47% line that I presented before. So we'll have a little breakdown on tickets, membership, tours, classes, et cetera, how they earn their income. Do an organizational type background to say that museums are certainly different than theaters like the Guthrie. There's a significant difference in earned income between the Institute and the Guthrie. Talk about that as a function of organizational type. Then do some numbers on earned income in other states as a percentage of total income, and they look like just roughly like Minnesota, somewhere between 42% and 52%.
That's the data that's come in through the certified financial statements of these other organizations. Comparable organizations help selected by the major organizations here, and we've analyzed them with the assistance of the Touche Ross contributed services to put them on the same type of categories as our own.
And to the extent that they look a lot like our organizations, it's a good argument for why our organizations aren't just exactly the way they are. And then finally,
I'd like to say here, excuse me, too, that in the source of earnings is the tickets. We're having a small study being done by some selected organizations as to ticket pricing, how they do their ticket pricing, and maybe if we can glean any information. I think there are about 16 organizations being studied here. As to how far they feel they can raise prices, etc. We will have really being run as an appendix information on the Twin Cities Metropolitan Arts Alliance voucher program. Another thing, when we get down to the marketing section, we'll be running this media report, because the media report is really directed, the thrust of it, this is being done by Ron McCoy for the State Arts Board. He's head of their media section. The thrust of his argument is that it's ways for nonprofit organizations to market themselves better. They are dealing with a profit sector, the media, newspapers, etc., television, except for educational television and educational radio, are essentially the profit sector, and ways that nonprofit organizations might more effectively market themselves, how they might use the media. So that study will come in that section too. Excuse me.
That's all I had to say.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Private sector, Cindy?
I don't really have a report other than we're working on the final draft of ours. We've received the first series of tabulations from control data. This is our corporate survey, and they are compiling the foundation survey at this point. We found that in order to describe total giving to all charitable causes in the state of Minnesota, we're going to have to rely upon national figures and figures from the Revenue Department and the Taxpayers Association. The study that this commission did provides good data on those corporations who give to the arts, but provides insufficient data on those corporations who do not give to the arts. Okay. This indicates that approximately 70 corporations in the state of Minnesota contribute more than 90% of the money that goes to the arts in the state. Very small contributor base. We've covered almost all of them in this survey.
What was that? What?
Over 90% of the money that goes to the arts.
Where did you get your list of contributors? Is that from the organizations themselves?
Both ways. You get a report from the primary arts survey telling you where their funds come from the private sector. Then you get the corporations telling us who they gave their money to. For the most part, they're fairly close. This survey, the corporate survey, is slightly under.
Well, it's almost close.
For example, I think Jimmy projected in 75 that corporations gave a little over 1.1 million to operating. To capital. Our survey shows a report of 1.06 to capital and 1.098 to operating. The organizations that give, they give about approximately 12% to capital, 12.5% to operating in the arts.
Again, these figures should be very, very accurate. The fact that we have two independent sources, and they're not, although it sounds like there was a close correlation.
Both in the same office.
We talked to corporations directly in terms of their contributions and how they spent them where, as well as the arts organizations who were reporting what they received all over the state. And those two are what dovetail within a very close percentage fact. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Now, as you might expect, when you look at the categories of gross sales distributions of the corporations we looked at, we received those corporations reporting gross sales 500 to 999 million. We have 60% of those organizations in our survey. We have 64% of the organizations reporting over 1 billion. As the size of the corporation increases, we have a better percentage of response.
One thing, too, that I think may lead off this whole private sector, public sector funding. I'm not sure Mary Ellen has done a history of government giving patterns, and Cindy will also do a little bit about the private sector giving patterns to give sort of a historical overview to this whole thing. And if time permits, we may integrate the two studies into a history of how the arts have been financed in the United States. I think there's so much.
When you're finished, I have one more thing.
I'm sorry, Cindy. Okay. I thought you were finished.
No, I was.
Go on.
The things that we're considering now are the recommendations and the conclusions that are coming out of this. And there are a couple things that need to be looked at. The first is, if these organizations have been giving 12% of their money to capital fund drives, what happens to that 12% when the drives are ended or when they're decreased? Do we recommend that they transfer a little bit of that money back to operating in the arts, or are they going to divide it back up among education, the social services, and the other areas that they've traditionally given in? And secondly, the fact that this survey indicates very well that arts organizations are not tapping a large percentage of medium-sized corporations at all. There exists no organized way to get at the medium-sized corporations. So I would say that those two areas are the areas in which we could recommend an increase in corporate support. Individual support is a little bit more difficult to determine because we don't have hard statistics on it, but again, there is a trend the larger arts organizations are moving toward developing programs to tap the middle income giver.
There's one other small part, I guess, of the of your package that is directed, I think, primarily at corporations. And I might mention that Cindy and I have been meeting with corporate and foundation contributions specialists over the last, what, 2 weeks, something like that, with all this information that comes in, getting their reaction. And one of the areas that we're exploring and that we'll have specific recommendations on is putting together sort of a recommended package for the corporation as an employer. How the corporation, because it has access, or the employer, because it has access to so many potential and existing customers or clients of arts organizations, can foster both contributions to the art organization and increase the numbers of client and customer support for arts organizations. And this will vary from corporate buy-ins to the existing voucher program, matching corporate gifts, somewhat similar to the matching gifts to education program. But our inclination now, with the advice of these people, is to, if we're going to avoid just getting the top management and try to get down into the lower levels of the company, is to try to match, have a corporate matching program for memberships, and encourage as many as possible of the arts organizations to develop membership programs at the 5, 10, 25, whatever it is, relatively small dollar level, pull down the expense of administering a membership program. So we think that'll be a good vehicle for people at the $10,000 to $20,000 income level to make contributions and have their contribution doubled with a corporate match. And then we get into a variety of other things, such as advertising and communications and ticket purchases and discounting and all the kinds of things that some of the major organizations do now that could be done collectively for lots of arts organizations if the business community is willing to participate in.
What reaction have you found to amongst the art organizations themselves to some sort of collective fundraiser? I don't know who can talk to it.
Well,
there was not a very positive response on the primary survey for the Federated Fund campaign for most organizations. Like, I'm guessing that it was about 27% said they'd be interested in that, which is low. That's 1 in 4.
Is that really a representative of just the metropolitan area?
No, that's across the state. Now, we could break that one down by region and see how it would distribute. I'm going to say that a lot of people didn't have enough information to respond really intelligently to the question. I think they needed, you know, we gave them a definition of what a Federated Fund campaign was, but even with that, I don't think they knew how it would really work well enough to be able to answer very honestly. We had a high ratio of non-respond or no opinions. You know, they just gave no opinion rather than a yes or no to it. So
I think what we have found out is in talking to people like Tyler Hawthorne and people at General Mills and other places who are already heavily committed to the arts, is that it's probably two things. That the federated approach in St. Paul, while it may reach out to a lot of medium and small sized corporations and individuals, is probably not getting what it could get out of some of the larger corporations because of the federated approach. On the Minneapolis side, however, we're missing, by not having a federated approach, we're missing an awful lot of medium, small-sized corporations and individuals. However, rather than put a federated giving program of some kind in place in Minneapolis with all the United Way pressures that everybody has to belong to, I think they have recommended to us that some kind of a United Way for the arts be put in place, probably by the business community in Minneapolis, directed primarily at the non-majors. With some provision, however, for small companies to give to the majors if they want to, within this whole program, and maybe it ends up being a small part of it, is grants money that the majors can go in and get money out of, but the bulk of it would be disseminated to the medium and smaller sized organizations. But it's going to have to be a different kind of animal from any we found any place in the country, but I think this committee will recommend some kind of united approach to fundraising.
Will that function any place outside the metropolitan area? Would it work in Duluth or Rochester or Boston or wherever?
Alright, let's keep moving on.
I think the foundation, did you speak on that, Cindy, or just you haven't gotten a report?
No, nothing, other than I want to restate that the foundation report will be forthcoming this week from Control Data.
Okay.
Similar complexity.
Public sector, Mary Ellen?
Well, the history is done and the delivery system is drafted, and I think we're waiting for a subcommittee meeting is about where it's at. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about your feelings on it, David?
Yeah, we at a previous meeting of the commission, I think you approved the basic outline of a recommendation that we should make that the state develop a state policy plan for the arts, which would have a state arts resources component, a regional arts resources component, and then a component for individual artists, developmental arts, and I think technical assistance or administrative. While we were working on that, and on or about July 26th, with the help of the Metropolitan Council, which is one of the Metropolitan Advisory Agencies to the State Arts Board, the State Arts Board started its own sort of analysis of this sort of thing. So right now, we are both going down the same track to come up with a model of a state arts policy plan, which has both state and regional components in it, and has the has built into it the long-range development of regional arts councils in multi-jurisdictional parts of the state, whether it's the current RDCs or it's some other sort of mix of counties and municipalities, is really maybe a four-year or longer, in some cases, process, which is supposed to be stimulated by the State Arts Board and staff coming from the State Arts Board, but which will eventually have autonomous or somewhat autonomous regional arts councils all over the state, whose responsibilities will be the regional arts resource, individual arts resource part of a state plan, and who will also make recommendations for funding, will actually do the funding of any state monies that goes directly for regional purposes, will eventually expand into arts services, federated fundraising, doing all this kind of thing out of a regional base. We looked at what Michigan and some other states have done in their recommendations, that there ought to be local commissions in every city, and said that that looked like those experiments were just that, experiments, and a lot of it didn't work. The local arts commission will work in certain municipalities, but that the better way to approach it, particularly given the way Minnesota government is organized and the way it's going and the way the federal monies are coming into the state, that we think the regional approach is better than going direct to a municipality.
Dave, I noticed that there was a Metropolitan Council Arts Advisory Group appointed here recently.
Right.
That's Rebozo.
That's really one of the positions.
Right.
Yeah, and we've been dealing with them, and they've been a liaison with the State Arts Board, so
Are they really a creature of the State Arts Board?
So they are one of the mandated regional advisory task forces that the last session legislature said the State Arts Board had to create all over the state. And right now I think they've got 9 out of 13. And at this point, those people are advising the State Arts Board. Eventually we're saying
the Metropolitan Council. I thought it was the other way around.
The Metropolitan Council
is advising the State Arts Board in effect through this
group is an offshoot of the Metropolitan Council, even though it's advising the State Arts Board for the metropolitan region. All right.
Okay.
We're going to do a draft.
Well, what's going to happen here, Wednesday at 10 o'clock, this regional group that the State Arts Board has put together, we saw their preliminary draft material the other day, and very good. In effect, it's the articulation of what we've been talking about. Wednesday morning, they're going to have their second to the last meeting, and I think out of that, by the end of the week, we will have this a written draft of what we're talking about.
What we're proposing is so similar to what the State Arts Board is proposing that it's worth the wait to know for sure what they're going to come out with, so that the language can confer and so forth. And the end product of both studies have been very, very similar.
Okay.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Support, I guess.
Well, the financing methods for state support, David, or what's being done on that?
All we're doing is trying to gather information on.
Okay.
We've gotten figures, for example, on the emissions tax from all the from the 20 largest arts organizations in the state, plus Northrop, plus the University Theater. You put them all together, it's about $320,000 in 1975. What we were trying to find out is, you know, if it were large enough, can we in effect go to the legislature and say that the legislature ought to appropriate to the State Arts Board or grants to state arts resources an amount equivalent to the state sales tax on admission to arts events in the state. If you took all the college theaters and everything in the state that charge admission, I suppose you could get that figure up closer to $400,000. But that's still a long way from Jimmy's projection.
Yeah. Okay, and then the final suggestion, which last or section, which I would really not be this, well, maybe part of the, yeah, funding of the arts section. The consumer support of the arts, I wrote up over the weekend, called sort of the citizen's case for the arts. I think Steve and David and everybody felt it's necessary to go to the legislature with a statement that about how the citizens do feel about the arts and ways they're showing their support for it already. And so I wrote up, this is sort of a directed to them. And I talk about first, there are two types of citizen support for the arts. Of course, direct support for the arts, and then indirect, which might be for, say, willingness to pay higher taxes, which is their way of indirect support. We have figures on the indirect support, the feelings of Minnesotans when we did the probe survey. We also asked them how they would feel about financing of nonprofit arts organizations, artists by the government. And I think 60% of the Minnesotans said they did approve of funding for nonprofit arts organizations. They're about evenly divided on qualified artists. But first I start out talking about the signs that show there is a grassroots support to the arts. And among these are, it's sort of a recap of all the things that have gone before from all the other sections of the report. We talked about the attendance at arts activities, both at nonprofit arts organizations, at the community organizations, at arts programs at the educational system. These are not only performances and exhibits, but workshops, classes, and lectures. Then I say, although we cannot, because of our information, we cannot accurately measure arts attendance growth in recent years, we do have one solid indicator of increasing consumer interest in the arts, and that is the fact that of the 229 nonprofit arts organizations surveyed, 50% of these were established within the last 10 years, a quarter of these being established in the last 4 years, which does show, obviously, the community willingness of communities to support these arts organizations. The next thing, then I go into the role of volunteers, because they do, as you heard from Mary Ellen, play a critical role in keeping these arts organizations going. Out of 25,000 people working in Minnesota's arts organizations in 75, 24,110 were volunteers. Put in 1,062,920 hours at 193 arts organizations to show there is a sort of legislature, it's what their constituents are doing. And then talk about how arts organizations actually run. they, how some arts organizations are run by volunteers, how their chief artistic director is volunteers, and the other kinds of work they do. They also talk about the board members and the role they, how many board members they are, the 2,500 or so board members, and what their role is in the overall operations of these arts organizations. Other donated support given by individuals is through in-kind contributions, such as legal and accounting work, talking about this. Then saying that they, talking about the fact that they do pay for the arts in by contributing to earned income. 81,000 people were, individual gifts first of over $1 million to arts organizations. Then they contribute to the financial port. I think there's a section missing, excuse me, in the report. That's why I'm having trouble there. There is a section missing here in the typing. The talking about the fact that there are 81,000, what is it, season subscribers to performing arts groups, and I think it's 56,000 memberships in organizations, which shows some type of financial contributions. And then I go into talking about the way that they are, the Minnesotans are, will indirectly support the arts through further government subsidies of the arts. Excuse me, I'm getting awfully tired here. And then we go through the probe attitudes, the 61% favor such arts organization support, and I bring in also the Lou Harris study here of Americans in the Arts that says a majority of Americans are willing to pay $10 or more a year in taxes to support the arts. And then finally go to the legislature saying that we hope you will consider these signs of your constituents' indirect and direct support for the arts, balance these with our proof of the needs of arts organizations for support, our explanation of why the arts organizations should be supported, and then take this as a mandate to give further appropriations to the arts. If I say the word again, you'll stop talking forever. I'm sorry, I will send this out after I edit it again.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you know, I don't think today's meeting can go on forever, and I think we should
we're done.
Get on to the timetable of what's going to happen next now. Right?
That's the end.
We are done with the report, the final report, and that gets us to the next two items on the agenda. What are we doing next? What's the commission membership?
Oh, I was just a statement that Phyllis Stigler has said the time.
Let's get on to the deadline on the report. Now we're going to get this together.
Yes.
We're going to talk on that.
Well, I think the current schedule in terms of meetings with this body is set up where you meet on the 1st and the 8th, and the time is set for the 15th, three meetings in the month of October, with which to deal with all this information. And I think the next meeting will be the one where most of this information will come to us in a really rough draft stage. There was some discussion amongst the staff that the meeting might be better held. It's currently set for a Friday the 1st, and be better held on a Monday, just for the sake of extra time for mailing.
For writing
and mailing information to get it in advance, and I think we may consider that and then let you know. But
in October 4th
instead of the 1st.
We'll better decide it right now.
Well, that's the reason I brought it up now, was to feel that there aren't very many here to really test it out with.
I think that if I'm typical of the members of the commission, I would much prefer to have the meeting when we have a fair amount of body in hand that we can read and analyze in advance and come in to discuss the three or four key issues that are in front of us, rather than have a meeting set as an artificial deadline and come with material half in, half out. I think this is extremely helpful to bring us all up to date, but from now on, if we're going to have an effective role as a body, we really have to have the stuff in hand in advance to concentrate on those major issues that are the commission's responsibility. So I think I would prefer deferring the next meeting until the time we're sure we're going to have that stuff in hand. Now, I gather then the best time is going to be, what, the 4th?
Well, you know, Monday the 4th would be a better time in terms of this stuff, getting us back together on writing and mailing, and I would recommend we did that.
And then what, two weeks after that?
Well, then the next one was currently scheduled to be 8th, that Friday, but that's only 4 days later, and I wouldn't recommend...
We won't have enough done before that.
So we may just move to another Monday, you know, Monday schedule of, instead of the 8th, meet on the 11th, that following Monday, the 15th, and I think we will be able to stick with that.
Well, the one thing about the 1st is that that's the one date that we've all had on our schedule for a long, long time,
long time.
Andy has wanted to go hunting, as I recall, as long ago as May.
He wanted to get off the 1st.
So, yeah, well, he wanted to, but everybody else, I think, still has October 1.
I think that's right.
If there is nothing that's going to be ready by the first part of next week to be mailed out,
There's stuff ready, but a lot of the major reports will not be coming into me until September 30th for editing, but they should be all about...
There'll be a bunch of things that we can send out, and we can consider those pieces. I mean, there are a lot of first drafts just about ready to go.
Everything is, you know, practically everything is in first draft. The education isn't.
Education.
Part of the primary isn't, but that should be in another week. I think you're anticipating it too, but, you know, people are... I say stick with the date, frankly, because we can get them rough drafts. But,
well, that's the best way to go. I just prefer to do that, but it was just brought up in some staff meeting that we might consider doing it.
I prefer the 1st only because I've been assuming that we are going to have most of the stuff, with the exception of private sector and public sector, and the last part of what Mary Ellen is doing,
by the first
part of next week, so it can be mailed out. If that is not the case...
Well, that hasn't changed. What you just said is we're still on that track.
And then we leave for the final meeting the decisions on how much money we're going to recommend the legislature funds and how much the private sector is going to fund. And, you know, those kinds of things.
When will those staff or those meetings be held?
The
1st and 15th.
We're talking about the 1st and 15th of October.
Well, now, as a procedural matter, I'm going to be away the entire month of October. And I'd like to, if it's appropriate, I'd like to pitch whatever comes to me. It will come to me, but I'll be a long ways away, to somebody else within the Art Society and have them make comments to somebody here. Is that okay?
Yeah,
we can call it. They would send me their comments, but you'll have a meeting before I know anything about them.
And you'll be able, if you want, we can make set up some part of the procedure where you can dictate your comments and they can come into Michael or whatever, and we can read them to the record, or we can just relay them directly to the commissioners.
I'm reacting to something that happened about 5 minutes ago. I am wondering about Phyllis Dibbler and that type of an input. You just felt we should not do anything about it. Mary being here today, I'm just wondering, you want her just to come and sit in, or what was the feeling?
Mary Martin is the executive director.
Phyllis Dibbler is moving out of town.
Phyllis Dibbler is moving out of town, which was her old job. Now, I'm not sure at this point if we want to actually replace another commissioner, or
the procedure for getting a new commissioner appointed is extremely cumbersome. Put it mildly, in the turnaround time between here and the governor's office and then back again will exceed probably the length of life of the commission. I think what we should do to have the best of both worlds is, if Mary's willing to come, and her official status will be as an observer, replacing Phyllis, who was a full commission member, and unofficially, you know, sit with the commission and let us have the benefit of your thoughts on it, so that we in effect operate informally in that fashion, but formally we've got our original procedure. I think that practically we'll have a hard time at this stage in getting approval of additional commissioners anyhow from that office. So if that is agreeable, that's what I recommend. All right. The meetings then will be October 1 and 15th.
Done. Commission budget, do we have anything we have to report?
Just wanted to make you aware of the fact that we're out raising money. We have $112,000 expenditure projection, which I'm going to have to increase because we're going to be here for another couple weeks, but we'll be able to get the money in.
All right, that's it. We're adjourned.
Just about
wait, let him really make a report. I didn't know all of this. I mean, most of it.